All right, if Mr. Neil Lacey can lead us in, can read our board goals and agenda.
Okay, the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District's vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Our vision, the Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Our mission, the Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Our beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and the best interest of students drive all decisions. The stakeholders' participation is crucial to all student success. Our core values are stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, and commitment. Our goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on career and college readiness. We will increase our graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in our education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. And our annual objectives and accountability is assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum with Member Gaddis and Member Cordero absent and excused.
Thank you. I'd like to turn this time now for awards over to Dr. Dina Paramo.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great evening to be here in the Matsu Borough School District. And it's a great evening because when we celebrate kids, the audience is full. So that's a good thing. Our board president and our vice president couldn't be here. She's going to assist me in providing these awards. Our students in the Matsu Borough School District, along with our staff, do outstanding things all year long. And we take the time quarterly to celebrate the success and the outstanding performance of our students and staff in academics, in co-curriculars, at both at the state level, local level, and national level. Matsu kids are top-notch. So with that help, we have quite a list to go through. So thank you for being here. And even if a student isn't here, I'm going to read his or her name because we do have Radio Free Palmer listening, and there might be a listening fan out there that wants to hear a name of a student athlete or exceptional academic student. When you come up, if you're part of a team, we're going to hold all the applause, and we can applause right when the team is done. And the certificates will be given to the coach if there's a lot of them, because sometimes we don't know the kids. And we do need a picture that we like to show for the press and able to share. We'll be sure that students allow us to publish it. But students, when you come up, go Miss Rutherford over for the picture so it'll really look good. Last time we had this in the way and it didn't look good on our website. So I'm into explicit instruction. Everybody knows what it's all about and what we can do. And now is the time to celebrate students. And I think I just saw some come in. The first award this evening is for the Wasilla High School Girls Varsity Cross Country members. So if they could start to come forward. These ladies are a team that I believe performed a three-peat in their performance. They won not only the regions, so they won the region for which we participate, but this is, I believe, the third time that they won the state. And with them is Coach Gary Howell. And Leslie. Where's Leslie? Okay. All right. Here's Leslie. And Leslie, where do you work? With these guys. Okay. I didn't know. I know that Mr. Howe is a teacher at Career and Technical High School, but coaches the Wasilla High School ladies. So I'm going to read their name. Miss Jenna Ford, Alicia Devine, Mandy Rittenberg, Peggy Mathis, Riley Burrows, Mariah Burrows, Amber Pell, and alternate Daniger Ingersoll. I don't see her here. But these ladies took the entire state, and they performed against schools that are twice their size. So congratulations. Sure. So we're going to take a picture with our board member.
Oh, we'll see you too.
A couple of
I'll be
taking
a couple steps in and close.
Jenna's used to going inside.
Whoa.
All right. Thank you, ladies, and congratulations for the Wasilla Warriors. Okay, this next group is quite a few members, actually more than a few. It is the Palmer High School football, and we'll be hearing lots about Palmer High School. They won the Rail Belt Conference Champions, which is our region, and they also took third in state. And Palmer has a population of about 800, and the schools for which they competed against have about 2,400, so they too can compete at a high level with schools that are over twice their size, almost three times their size. Their coach is Coach Rod Christensen, and in addition to coaching the Palmer Moose to third place, Mr. Christensen was the coach of the year. Was he able to attend tonight? There he is. Come on forward. There you go. Okay. And his team, just please come up. Vincent Ayumade, Nathan Pempek, Cameron Christensen, Ashton Tatum, Kyle Pittett, Darian Engel, Luke Hune, Cody Wells, James Nisbet. Who is Mr. Nisbet? Okay, his name was on the news all the time, and I noticed it because Nisbet is in the Toy Story. So, Mr. Nisbet. All right. He was announced all the time. You must run the ball in. What's that? Yeah. Okay.
Like a lot.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so after Mr. Nisbet, it's Tanner Watson, Mason Cochran, Nathaniel Copperin, Cody Wannabe, Justin Roth, Dylan Myers, Mason Swinehart, Dakota English, Benjamin Amubahi, so there's a brothers, I guess, Chris Cooney, Zeth Merritt, Ben Button, Slade Stroud, Caleb Nielsen, Kenai Sparkman, Cole Frawling, Bob Kelly, Dylan Pollard, Adam Christensen, Miles Kayer, Graydon Powell, Lance Cassandra, Keen McMaster, Nick Benshelter, Brian Thompson, Alex McDowell, AJ Colander, Gunnar Diemer, Brady Southwick, Nick Corbin, Hayden Niekamp, Joey Leichman, Tony Morrison, Shoy Wannabe, and Daniel DeLay. So sorry about those names, but way to go, Moose! Yeah. And I promised one of these players that I would mention that while last year the well-renowned Potato Bowl was taken by the Warriors, this year the Potato Bowl was won by the Moose. So there you go. Okay, we'll take it. Your third place state champions. And Palmer High School is no secret, and to winning teams. This year, we just completed about a couple of weeks ago the varsity volleyball championships for the state, and Palmer High School ladies took third place in the state tournament this year as well. And once again, I must say, the other top two teams were South and Diamond. And those schools are well over 2,400 each. And so a little under 800, Palmer Moose. These ladies were coached by Steve Reynolds, and assistants were Jerry Moses, Jamie Diehart, Bryce Ray, and Robert Black. If they can come forward, coaches, if you're here. And the team, Macy Beresh, Jessica Cole, Lily Cullors, Calais DePriest, Cassidy Geis, Mariah McNamara, Elliot Perkins, Brecken Rykena, Leah DePriest, Melena Showalter, and I think Melena might have a brother on the football team. There's a Showalter in the football. And Leah Reichel. Okay, so here are some of the Palmer Moose that took third place in the state at the state tournament. And I'd like to also mention that Palmer won a bid 3 years ago to host the state tournament here in the Valley, bringing people from around the state, over 1,000 people right here to our valley, And I heard that McDonald's ran out of food. So that's good. And we do have another high school that had some top honors. I'd like to announce the annual Alaska Cheer Competition was once again won by the Colony High School Varsity Cheer Squad. If those members could come forward. I know that their coach is out of state, but the assistant coach for the JV was Brittany Nardini. Is this Brittany? Hi, Brittany. Oh, the only one here. And so Brittany's team for the JV also won, but we'll go ahead and call it the varsity. And I believe that the varsity won. This is like 10 years in a row. Something.
Well, this is eight.
Oh, eight. If you rounded eight to 10, to the nearest 10, it would be 10. So any other girls here? No. Okay, so this is the coach, Brittany Nardini, and she had a team for varsity that took first place. And I believe that they're going to might keep that winning spirit up to make that 10 because the JV team also took first place. So thank you very much, and we'll take a picture with you. Last year when we did our awards, we were actually over at Palmer High School, and I hope that they didn't come. When the cheerleaders came up, I said, well, show me a first place kind of cheer, and they had to do a cheer. So I hope that wasn't the reason why they didn't come back. Okay. So these next athletes have competed this year, just recently actually, a couple of weeks ago, on November 16th to 18th on J-Bear, and they were there with 400 other young athletes and coaches for the Special Olympics. These students traveled into Anchorage and competed. Special Olympics is an accredited program of the Special Olympics Incorporated, a global organization that's provided sports training and competition to people with intellectual disabilities since 1968. And we have several winners. I'll call these individually because these were not team awards. They were either partner awards or single awards. So these students did it on their own, basically. And I would like to name the first student. It's Kendall Lacey, a student at Wasilla Next Step. Kendall took a gold medal in bowling doubles and a silver medal in bowling singles. Kendall Lacey, please come forward. Congratulations. Who is your partner? Is that person here? When you did doubles? I'll just call him. Yeah. Is Kristen? Kirsten? Okay. Next person is Kirsten. Oh, okay. We'll take it one picture. Okay. Where's your partners? Okay, stay up here, Kirsten. Okay, Kirsten was also from Wasilla Next Step and was the silver medal bowling doubles partner, and Kirsten took the bronze bowling singles. So congratulations to these. You want just a bow. And next we have Kindren Forbes from the Matsu Day Schools. Kindren here? Nope. Okay, Eric Yuntz. I see Eric here is from Colony Next Step. Congratulations. Eric. And Eric took the bronze. He was on the bronze medal team for the bowling. There you go. And you have to turn around, Eric, for a picture. Turn around this way. Okay. And is Shakai Spencer here? We weren't sure if... Okay. Is Patrick here? No. Okay. So, with the Special Olympics, we'd also like to announce two staff members why the students are up here, because these staff members have supported the Special Olympics, and I'd like to please announce Kelly Merrill to please come forward. Kelly was a sponsor, participated in the 2012 Special Olympics bowling event this semester, and she works to get students with disabilities involved in the program. So she's a coach. Congratulations. And finally, Chris Bell. Is Chris Bell available? Nope. Chris Bell was another teacher who also, so we need a picture with everybody of our staff and our students who participated. So, all right, and our board member will be in the back. Congratulations, guys. Good job. Next, we have a school who has demonstrated some academic and some other extra co-curricular excellence. And this is actually for a school, so I'm not sure all the folks who are going to come up. But for Mokattam's Elementary School, there was an article in the paper this fall, in regard to their first place state fair exhibit, their garden display. Mokattam's elementary students and staff designed, built, and incorporated local suppliers and grew a magnificent garden. This fall, their harvest produced a magnificent harvest celebration at the school and won the Alaska State Fair Blue Ribbon. I was invited to try some of the stew. It was excellent. And the sponsors for the garden were physical education teacher Krista Hayes. Please come forward. We have the principal here. Please come forward. You guys can come forward. And the teachers were Amy Roberts and Sarah Rodriguez, if they're here. Please come forward. Congratulations. And we have a student, and they won first place at the state fair for their work at Mokattam. So congratulations. Congratulations. Good job on the pledge. Congratulations. All right. We'll take a good picture. Great, thank you. And if Ms. Hayes could come up, she's on here again. Mokattam's Elementary actually won in the entire state the State Healthy Futures Challenge winner. So Healthy Futures is a grassroots statewide initiative founded in 2003. Mokattam's is one of 8 schools participating in the Alaska Healthy Futures. Mokattam's won first place in the Tier 1 schools with a $750 award for their school. So they took first place in the state in their size school. And it was spearheaded and promoted by one of our best PE teachers in the entire state, nation, what else? World! Physical education teacher, Krista Hayes. Congratulations. And Mr. Tom Lytle, the principal.
Just because you want to come here?
Yeah. I see her with 400 kids, but she won't come up here for one picture. Okay, hey. Thank you. Good job. Next, we have a Red Ribbon, Red Ribbon Week contest winners. Red Ribbon Week is the oldest and largest drug prevention campaign in the country. It serves as a vehicle for communities and individuals to take a stand for our children through a commitment to drug prevention and education and a personal commitment to live drug-free in our lives. And we had a first-place poster contest winner. From Colony Middle School's leadership class, so the class together put this together under the teacher advisor, Miss Tanya Hirsch. Please come forward. And her principal is here if she'd like to come forward, Miss Mary McMahon. And we have some students who are in the leadership class. What's your name, honey?
Taylor.
Taylor Van Gorder and
Leah Yant,
two of our leaders in the leadership class who won this award. So congratulations. We also had the first place radio commercial for the same event, and it was given to the Wasilla High School peer helpers and peer leaders under the direction of Ms. Deb Haynes, the teacher advisor, and the class representatives. If Zane Davis, Sarah M., or Morgan McVeigh are here, please come forward. We weren't sure that they could make it, but they also took first place in the audio commercial. So congratulations to Wasilla High. All right, now we have another student through her artwork. Her name is Jessica Hackett, and she is from Iditarod Elementary School in fifth grade, and she won second place in the state's Iditarod Trail Committee 2013 button contest design. So if Jessica Hackett is here, please come forward. All right, there she is. Can you shake your hand? Congratulations, Jessica. Can you tell us what your button was about?
It was about the Iditarod Trail.
Mm-hmm. What, did you have dogs on it or sleds? Mm-hmm. Or cool.
A dog and a sled
on a pin. All right, good job. Okay. Second place in the state. Right here from Iditarod. How ironic. Oh, good job. Yeah. Next, we have many, many students, and I'll just run through their names as I did the football and volleyball teams. Colony Middle School, if you haven't seen the play, it's too late, but they'll probably be doing another production next year. As stellar as this one, Colony Middle School put on the play The Little Mermaid, and it was directed by Ben Wargo, and the music director was Toby Lampert, and the choreographer was Emma German. And it had a combination of Colony Middle School cast, Finger Lake cast, Mermaid Cruise, quite the production and community event that actually started in the summer. We were, I actually went to go see it, and it was phenomenal, and just thought that they needed a bigger audience. So we tried to get all fifth graders in the entire district to see it. Six schools out of our 20 weren't able to, but 14 schools, fifth graders, were able to see this last week. So, principal, we have the directors. They can come forward, principal, if you'd like. And I'm just going to say the cast names so that they have one more time in the spotlight. Hannah Decker, Daniel Bass, Luke Johnson, Andrew Cooley, Rebecca Sutcliffe, Isaiah Corlendo, Jessica Rents, River McKenta, Lunia Oriole, Grace Etheridge, Mariah Fry, Sydney Arbit, Austin Shaw, Aaron Donaldson, Tessa McDonald, Jasmine Stevens, Alex Mattson, Rebecca Hall, Montana Beeson, Sage Sybil, Courtney Cooley, Emmett Kaywood, Maisie Dave Berry, Sarah Clark, Catherine Seals, Melina Grasmick, Ellie Phillips, Kathleen Zyga, Isabella Krosek, and Elena Scott. And I'm not sure, are the Finger Lake folks here too? Should I? Yes? No. Okay. So hopefully I didn't forget anybody's name, but the play was amazing. These students did an excellent job. And is the mermaid here?
Ariel. And a step forward, and we got Eric.
Ariel, I really thought your hair was red.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, you did a wonderful job. So, yeah. I was like, wow, you did a great job. It was at the time. Okay.
It was red till last night.
Okay. So really, for the fifth graders, there was just as many younger kids involved, and so I thank the teachers and the sponsors and the parents, because doing such a high-level production with so many students, getting to do something all at once was pretty phenomenal, but it was absolutely a terrific play. Congratulations, Colony Middle School. All right. All right. Next, we are honoring a teacher. There is a teacher in one of our schools at Houston Middle School who was nominated and was awarded the Matsu Teacher of the Year. Please come forward, Miss Brandy J. Bishop. If you're here, is Brandy here? Here she is. Brandy is one of our outstanding middle school language arts students, our students, a teacher of students, but she's a student herself. She continues her learning. And Brandy not only took first place in the Matsu out of our 1,200 teachers, she was the Teacher of the Year, but in the entire state, Brandy was a runner-up for Teacher of the Year in the entire state. So congratulations.
Thank you,
sir. All right.
Thank you, Brandy. Turn it this way.
Thank you.
I teach middle school.
Yeah. All right, thank you. This next award was actually won by a whole department, and this is something that I hope our community finds of value as well. In addition to the things that we do with students, we also try to use our money effectively and efficiently, and we did, as a district, receive the Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting Award presented to the Matsu Borough School District. It is a national award, and due to the completeness of our budget, the accuracy, the planning, I guess the checks and balances that we put in, it's a highly sought after award, and Matsu Borough School District Accounting Supervisor did receive this award for our entire district, so I hope you find that our accounting services are prudent. So please come forward, Joy Stein, if you're here.
Is this different?
Oh, okay. Oh, and they received this nice award to put in the school district. So the third year we've received this, so thank you. Mm-hmm. Can you figure out how to get more money?
Yeah, that's what
we want. We have more money to do more fun things with kids. Okay. And we are on the final page. Oh, no. We have an Educator to See program. And is Mr. Tim Lesso here? Mr. Tim Lesso, please come forward. Mr. Tim Lesso is a Colony High School teacher. And I'd just like to announce a little bit about this award because it's different. And one educator is chosen from the state of Alaska to participate each year, and it's the Navy's Educators to See program. It's a unique opportunity that affords educators a chance to tour the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier, spend the night aboard the carrier, and dine with the crew members. Mr. Lesso spent days in the Pacific Ocean aboard the carrier in October, interacting with sailors, learning about management, leadership, and networking with educators around the country. And he's a phenomenal biology teacher at Colony High, I hope. Yes, I figured, yeah. That would be what I'd place. But Colony High School teacher received this award and went out on an aircraft carrier and learn things that he can bring back into the classroom. So congratulations for taking
Thank
that
you.
Extra step. Good job. All right. Thank you. Okay, we do have some of the Alaska Association for Career and Technical Education Award recipients. And the statewide awards were given to educators based on their contributions to their fields, the reviews of their peers, and the endorsement of their principal. And so this was queried by other career and technical educators around the state, as well as recommended through their schools locally. And we have two winners this year from our career and technical high school. So the best Alaska Health Sciences Teacher of the Year is Ms. Shawnee Glenn. Please come forward. And her principal is here. Mr. Okeson can come up. Congratulations. All right. And the other CTHS teacher, Ms. Amy Riddle, is the best Alaska business IT teacher in the state of Alaska. So congratulations. Thank you. Thanks. And finally, we were asked to put these last three awards at the very end. These three students all received kind of similar awards. They had to come late because they were practicing basketball to keep up their skills. All three of these next recipients received full-ride basketball scholarships, and they're all seniors, and they're all ladies. And so let me announce their name. So the first person this year to sign a letter of intent is going to play at Biola University in La Miranda, California. Her name is Kyla Dinkle. She's a senior at Matsu Central School, and she hopefully this year will lead the Wasilla Warriors to their goal, I think, of winning the third in a row state win this year in basketball. That's what they're going for. Miss Kyla Dinkle, please come forward. Congratulations. Yeah. All right. I bet her parents are very happy. That's about a $100,000 award right there. Okay. This next athlete also is a senior, a teammate of Kyla's. She signed right here at home with the University of Alaska Anchorage. So next year you can go see her play. Just drive on down the road. 12th grade Wasilla High School senior, Alicia Devine. Please come forward. All right. Mm-hmm. And this next, and we want to take a picture of all three of you at the end, but this next person, her goal is to make sure that Wasilla doesn't win the state because she's actually from a different school. She didn't really say that. I did. But we love great competition right here in the Valley. And her name is Miss Mary Klaperick. She just last week signed with Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah, following her two sisters who also played basketball in college, Miss Mary Klaperick. Please come forward. Congratulations. All right, and we'd like all three athletes to come forward. And we want to know where the gentlemen ball players are in there. Where are they? But these ladies made us and their parents proud. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, our board president, Ms. Susan Powers, and I would like to say thank you for coming. And we do have cake and a little reception. And please enjoy celebrating what kids do best here in the Matsu Valley. Thank you.
Order. Can I have an approval of the agenda?
I would like to approve the agenda.
Second.
The agenda is approved. We'll move on to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk, if you can read the rules.
So, public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. There will be up to 1 hour for persons to be heard. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per board policy 1312, individuals testifying may not discuss complaints against individual employees. Specifically, the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for the public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to a single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard, or may be handled in executive session, or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove a disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. We have our first half hour at this time. And no one has signed up to speak on non-agenda items. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to speak?
This is your chance to be heard by the board. No one? Okay, we will move on then. We're going to borough and city reports. I see Mr. Cottle from City of Wasilla. Would you like to come up?
Madam President, board members, I just want to bring you up to date. My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla, up to date on the land transfer for the new Wasilla Library. Resolution number 164 passed the borough last night, so it is official that the land, the 4 acres on Swanson and Lacey or Lucille, have been transferred to the city. And that started here, and that started in September of 2011. So I want to thank Dr. Paramo and her staff, and also the school board and the two school board members who are not here tonight, who were here in 2011, and that's Lynn Gaddis and Mike Dunleavy. Without you guys starting it, we wouldn't have got the 4 acres, plain and simple. And you stuck with us through the whole process and helped us get support behind the scenes, and I just want to thank you for that. Right now in the process, we've got 4 acre group working with us. We got a grant for $150,000 to get us through this phase of it for the design and the blueprints and be ready to go to Juneau in January. So we'll be in Juneau in January. The price tag right now is set at $15.5 million. That's for a one-story building of 23,500 square feet. So we're going through the design phase right now. And I'll keep you up to date as we get a little closer. But our hope is to start construction in 2014 would be the timeline. So I just want to tell you thank you, because without your support, this would not have happened. So we're one step closer. The other thing is just to say, on New Year's Eve at 8 p.m., the city of Wasilla will host the fireworks along with the Chamber of Commerce at Iditarod Park. So it will not be on the lake this year. We ran out of parking last year, so it'll be over at Iditarod Park. So New Year's Eve, 8 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else here from the borough or city of Palmer, so we'll move on. Administrative reports. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. At this time, I'd like to introduce Kendra McPhail, our school board representative. She and her team will present a Youth Leadership Institute report. This team attended the AASB, which is the school board statewide meeting, and Ms. Kendra McPhail.
As you all know, the Executive Board of Student Rights Board had the opportunity to attend the Youth Leadership Institute. And tonight we have a brief presentation for you.
YLI gave us the opportunity to use our leadership and communication skills. All students were given the chance to participate in roundtable discussions, where we conversed with school board members from all around the states about current issues we face as students. The members also talked to us about their struggles on the school board, and we all shared our successes. This new twist on perspective would open up collaboration in our district and at the student, faculty, school, and administrative level.
One of the speakers, Dr. Sven Håkesson, came up and spoke to just the students. One of the things he mentioned was that sometimes you have to listen to be heard. This struck a chord with me since it reminded me that other people's opinions are important, should be heard, and are essential when representing anyone. Another thing that I learned was to take the criticism and compliments together as a pair and to remain positive because it's all helpful feedback.
The unique thing about Kiwa Media is that they are trying to incorporate technology into more traditional types of learning and cultures. This is a way of getting everyone an equal footing at the table. In our culture now, diversity is much more celebrated. It shows that together we can accomplish collaboration, communication, and better involvement in schools across the district.
Josiah was in a movie called On the Ice, which took place in Barrow. He came and talked to the Youth Leadership Institute about his experience in the Bush area and keeping culture into perspective. What I took from Josiah was, you can learn from other people's mistakes. You don't have to make them yourself. The main thing was, never second guess yourself as a leader and love what you do.
One of the key realizations we made was the importance of consistency as leaders in order to be reliable and trustworthy, to do what we say and say what we mean.
We focused a lot on motivation, and one of the main points we discussed was that we must inspire both ourselves and others to make change happen.
Everyone as a leader has their own opinions and ideas, and as a leader, we need to keep that in perspective.
At the Youth Leadership Institute, we learned valuable insights on how to be an effective leader, which includes communication and collaboration. With these tools, we hope to bring these ideas back to our school and teach other students about how to not only be a better leader in our community, but global citizens who are prepared for jobs, college, and the future. Are there any questions?
Madam President, one of the things I would like to say is that this group, led by Mr. Jensen, really represented our entire district. There's another couple ladies missing, but we do have a student missing tonight from our middle college. But these ladies are Colony High, Palmer High, Career Technical High School, and Wasilla High School. So they really represented the different communities that we have in Mat-Su well. And they did let me know that there are boys involved in leadership as well.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the superintendent update.
Thank you, Madam President. Items on the agenda will be a review of the budget as well as a bond project update. We do have our liaison from the borough here. Mr. Ken Forrest and Mr. Luke Folp will assist with some of those items. Prior to those items, I would like to share that as of today, the MATSU annual report is published for FY12. It is a wonderful document, and Catherine Essery, our public information officer, is the author and editor. Of course, it takes everyone in the district. It's about what we do. We will do a presentation for our legislative delegation tomorrow on these items, very short, as well as next Monday at our joint meeting with the borough. We will publish this on the website, and if we're requested, we'll have them for our rotaries and our Chamber of Commerce's. This is really our district in the MATSU borough. It includes the demographic data and the folks that we teach and the people we employ. It talks about milestones, and you'll please note that the ACT and SAT mean scores for MATSU borough are higher than the mean scores in the state of Alaska, as well as higher than the mean scores in the nation. We also have instructional benchmarks identifying that our SBA scores in MATSU are higher than the state mean in every grade level. Also, you'll notice that our AP scores, not only kids attending and taking the challenge of taking AP courses, we have more kids taking the tests and passing them. Our graduation rate has increased. And finally, you'll notice that we have added some financial information as well as our postgraduate studies about what are our kids doing when they leave us, because we know the ultimate goal and the mission of this district is to prepare students for success. And I believe success is determined when they leave us, not while they're with us. And so we will go into that more depth tomorrow, but I wanted you to have a look at that. At this time, Mr. Ken Forrest is going to present the budget, and this is a momentous occasion. This is Mr. Forrest's last budget presentation for our district. He will be leaving us in June. Sad to see him go, but I want to let the board know that the numbers you're going to see are with the information, as always, we have so far. Knowing that the last 2 years there was not an increase in the base student allocation, which is the metric that the state uses to fund public education, there has not been an increase in 2 years, yet we have had increases in fixed costs, both in energy, contracts, things like that. You will notice that once again we're coming to the table and saying that there is a deficit. We are not alone. I've met for 3 months now with the superintendents from the other large school districts, and for those listening, the other large school districts are, they're called the Big Five, and the Big Five in the state are MATSU, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Juneau. And of the five, MATSU is the second largest, and of the five, we educate 76% of the students in the entire state. And so the other 24% are educated in 48 other districts, whereas the Big Five has 76% of the students. Each one of us has a structural deficit. Each one of us knows that without a change in state funding, it's going to be difficult to continue doing exactly what we do this year. And of course, we always look to improve, but the other districts have more than MATSU has already through timber receipts, as well as through military funding and impact aid. The other communities around our state are receiving more funds. And we've shared this, and this is public information, and so it can be verified as well. But we're going to demonstrate how we're beginning this session and beginning what we're moving into. And, of course, our job, and we did receive an award tonight in regard to our finances and our efficiencies. However, we're going to do our very best. We want to keep the opportunities for kids. We had a celebration for kids this evening in the things that they can do and become. And it was a delightful thing, and we want to continue to do that for our students and our teachers. Once again, this is the beginning, and it is not the end. I will do everything I can in Juneau to bring goodness and wealth to Mat-Su. So with that, Mr. Ken Forrest.
Good evening. Please feel free to ask questions as we go through. The very first slide indicates that we do not have our final numbers for this current fiscal year, FY13. So FY12-13, this letter, which was received at the very end of November, so it's very recent, is indicating that the state will not be certifying the intensive funding until the very end of February. In addition to that, we do have a number of students that were claimed by more than Mat-Su. So we have some duplicate enrollments, and we're working through those conflicts. Once those are done, we expect to hear from the state probably in January on those. So we'll be able to certify our official count probably late January. But really, we're looking at all the way to March before we can tell you what the state funding will be for the school district. So that's just the initial assumption. So what are the components of the foundation formula? And so as you can see here, the Alaska's funding formula has a number of multipliers and a number of components. We've broken this down to show you what all of those components are and just how the formula builds to the totals for net foundation funding for this school district. You can see that as per the count, with regard to enrollment, we were a little bit higher than anticipated, but our school size factor, as you've heard Dr. Paramo mention before, the kids didn't end up in the schools we thought they would, and so therefore we lost money on that one. The district cost factor, we lost some money on. That is directly related to the number of students. The special needs factor, also a combination in the formula, we lost some money there. Voc ed factor is down due to the count being down. Correspondence count was up from prediction, so there's a gain there. But then, of course, the correspondence factor takes 20% of that gain away. And then the intensive needs factor, thanks to Lucy Hope and her team, you can see that they are, quote-unquote, the savior, bringing in an extra $2.6 million there. That is one of the numbers that has not been certified. And then the Quality Schools grant. So these are the various components and what they generated versus prediction versus the actual count.
Quick question, if I
yes,
could. Madam Chair. Going back to that previous slide, when you have in the correspondence you talked about, is up, how does dual enrollment work as far as allocating funds from the state?
You cannot be dual enrolled and receive neither. You cannot have enrollment in two districts and receive funding for each district. So that is what these conflicts are being resolved on. And so what we have is we have a number of students who perhaps showed enrollment in IDEA plus Mat-Su Central, and we have to determine which school is going to be allowed to claim them.
We have quite a few dual enrolled. Is that?
We do. We're down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 that have not been resolved. We started off with over 50.
And how many do we have dual enrolled?
I don't have that number.
But the conflicts were 50 dual enrolled. Is that correct?
No, the conflicts were on the official count. The state showed that the Mat-Su Borough School District and another district were claiming the same student. And that other district or other school, if you will, could be IDEA, which is a number of them. So it's not possible to be dual enrolled for payment. It is possible to be enrolled in a private school as long as you're not receiving credit for the same courses. That is audited on a monthly basis, and the reports of that audit are submitted to the district.
So you can be dual enrolled. You can get them. We can get the money for enrolling in Mat-Su, and they can still be, the student can still be enrolled in a part-time or half-time in another, like private school or another
They can be.
Okay.
But there are requirements which must be met, and those requirements are audited to ensure that they are not receiving dual credit for the same courses.
Okay, thank you.
As Dr. Paramo mentioned, all of the estimates you'll see tonight are based on the information we have as of today. These projections make no allowance for loss of revenue due to the enrollment conflicts, and they make no assumptions with regard to the loss of revenue on the intensive, meaning we believe that we will obtain most of our conflicts. Those conflicted students, we think most of them truly belong to the Mat-Su Borough School District, and we believe that the intensive funding will stand as submitted. This projection assumes that all reserves will be utilized to maintain the balance of the budget. So what does the year look like? We started off with column A, which is the 11-12 actuals, and those are from the audit. And so this is the result of the previous fiscal year. Then we look at column B. Column B is the column which the board adopted with the amended budget. Column C is what the budget looks like today based on what we know from the funded pupil count. And you can see that we're currently anticipating, while the utilization of all reserves will occur, that we will have the beginning fund balance, we'll attempt to maintain it. Should we not receive all of our funding for the intensive, or we lose some of the kids in the conflicts, then this ending fund balance will go down. There's no place else to take it from. And you can see that overall revenue from actual, if you look at column D, it says we took C, which is where we are as of today, based on the count from A, last year, audited financials. Overall revenue is up about 5.24%. We're currently predicting that overall expenditures will be up 5.83%. That in and of itself is a structural deficit. Expenditures are higher than revenue. In addition to that, you'll notice that in that revenue number, the 5.24, the ending fund balance is included. So it's really an increase of 5.13 in ongoing revenue against expenditures of 5.83%. You can see that even that we went up about $5 million in the cost for salaries, and that's with a strict hiring review, almost a freeze in place. Benefits, even though we did not have an increase in the actual cost of benefits for our medical, they still are up 3.43. As people's salaries go up, some of the fixed cost benefits go up with them. And then you can see the state on behalf of, really it went up a large amount. However, it's both a revenue and expense, so it's relatively insignificant. It's immaterial. Utilities, projected to go up 8.78%, and non-personnel costs about 19.54% to support some of our programs. Now we're going to provide you with an assumption, a very first assumption, for the next fiscal year 13-14. We're going to base the intensive funding on only 90% of the count that we had this year. That's primarily because of that memo. We need to wait and see what the state is going to do. We don't want to be overly optimistic on that revenue. We're going to say that the state is going to give, at a minimum, a 1.5% increase to that energy relief fund. So we're not saying we're not going to get anything. We're not saying we're getting a lot of extra money. We're saying the state will give us at least 1.5%. We're going to assume that the borough is going to give us 1.5%. And local revenue goes up a large percent, 14%, but in reality it's only $25,000. And the beginning unassigned fund balance will be completely utilized in this scenario. Salary expenditures assume no cost of living increase. So the projection you're about to see has no cost of living increase. As the board and everyone else is aware, this is a negotiation year. But right now, we're saying no cost of living increase. Salary expenditures assume a grade and step increase, which is an average cost of 5.5%. And the reductions of the salary expenses that we have made to date with this strict hiring freeze will be maintained, with only four exceptions noted below. Those are factored into the budget. We're going to say that the total cost of benefits will increase 9.64%, which is really a 6% increase in your health and dental benefits, because remember, they went up about 3.64% when we had a zero increase. So we're saying perhaps a 6% increase for the health benefits. That will net a 9.64. That looks like a large number, but we're going from a zero this year. Utilities will be forecasted to go up at the same rate as this year. Non-personnel costs will, that rise from this year will be dropped to 1.5%. We're going to show you in this forecast that the state does not correct the errors in Senate Bill 182, which would cost the district $1.5 million in transportation subsidy. And we're going to assume that there is no subsidy to the food service fund, same as this year. We're going to assume in this projection that the state continues to fund these programs as they did this year, the Alaska Middle College School, the ITEC Apex Cyber Centers, Wasilla Air Force ROTC, which has the possibility of obtaining federal funding, but this will not be a general fund source. And then the STEM and STEAM programs would receive additional funding from the state. Or, in this scenario, either we receive the funding or we would have to make cuts in instructional programs to offset the costs to continue these programs. It's very early. This is an assumption. So what does it look like? Well, you can see that we're showing you the funding for 12-13 based on the count, as we did on the previous slide. Now we show you the difference. Revenue would only increase, it actually decreases by 1% because of the reduction and the assumption of 90% on the count for the intensive. Overall, it's about even in this projection, unless we receive, as Dr. Paramo indicated, more money from the state. We're predicting that that will only generate a flat revenue. Why? You'll notice at the very top, we're not predicting a very large increase in the number of students. The cohort survival projection shows that we're going to remain about level. Then we get down to the numbers below. Again, with no COLA increase, we're still showing that expenses would go up about 5% on salaries, the 9.64, and the other, as previously mentioned. You'll notice this overall projection results in a structural deficit of $13.3 million, or roughly 133 FTEs. What makes this up? This chart shows you that in addition to that flat revenue, total expenditure increases are up $12,988,000. And you can see the percents. 81%, or $10,500,000 of that, is compensation cost increase. And remember, no COLA. This is what it costs to maintain status quo on our contracts. We show you the $1.5 million for the transportation subsidy, and then the small increases for utilities and non-personnel cost. So, to sum up, this year's budget is extremely tight. Any reductions in revenue or non-forecasted expenditure increases will come out of our ending fund balance, and that could drop to zero if we have large expenditures. The initial forecast for FY 13-14 is dramatically out of balance and is going to require program reductions, reductions in support services, and layoffs to balance the budget, which obviously will dramatically increase class size again. So we have the structural deficit. It has returned. And what it boils down to is the same as before. The district cannot afford its current compensation packages because the revenue stream coming from the state and other ongoing revenue sources is insufficient to cover the expenses. We did talk about enrollment remaining relatively flat. And in the 14-15 year, we have to look out and say, as the new middle high school starts to come online and the new elementary school comes online, we're going to have some additional cost out of the general fund associated with opening those schools. And this board is familiar with those. And we'll have a better idea as we move forward as to what those will be. Certainly staff will follow kids. But when you open a new building, you have the administration, custodial, maintenance, et cetera, that has to be funded. And that's my presentation for tonight. Any questions?
Mr. Larson?
The back on when you let me find it here real quick. Under your assumptions that the state will fund STEM, ROTC, Middle College, the four areas, I'm not sure what page that was on. I just have the legislative priorities. What page is it?
Page nine.
That's like $2.5 million. Is that not correct?
Almost three.
Almost $3 million. Do you really think the state will fund an additional $3 million over and beyond? I'm just wondering. That's an assumption that they will.
Mr. Larson, I do believe so. These are programs that the state is excited about. They're successful. They chose to fund them last year, and I believe that we've shown the return on the investment. We're going to talk to them tomorrow. They're vibrant. And if they don't, then they'll have to go away. But these are something that they've supported the first time ever, instructional programs last year. But that's what our delegation has been telling us to add value.
So if they fund them this year, are we going to also ask them to fund them continuously for fiscal 2014 and on up? Or will we eventually absorb the funding somehow?
A lot of these programs, the startup cost, depending on the number of kids. So we did a three-year plan, and that would be phased out. We have some other revenue sources, the Air Force JROTC. We were federally audited, and because they closed down others, they might fund that one. So we have positive that might be replaced. Alaska Middle College essentially costs this the same as it builds. It's a three-year building, and so our staff that we need to provide the program will remain the same for 3 years while the student count will grow times three, so 40, 80, 120. And so we won't need additional funds. It will build upon itself. It was the startup cost, basically, that the state supported. STEM and STEAM are programs for professional development and some teachers at the middle schools. We would just have to adjust just those and not have that added value. But we do have our requests, you'll see on the legislative items, are for 2 years, and then that would be phased out.
Mr. Forrest, exactly what programs are we going to cut to balance this thing in 13-14?
It's pretty early to start on that process. We have not heard, not seen the governor's proposal for a budget. A good question might be, as we meet with the legislative delegation, do they have an idea as to what type of funding might be coming to the school district? It's not just a matter of cutting programs. We need to look at our compensation packages and how we can address that structural issue. We can address reductions in programs only so far. We need to look at our ongoing expenses and what can be done to mitigate the annual ever-increasing cost in that area.
And please note, through the President, that the numbers we provided, we know what things will cost us next year. And we've included those with the assumptions that we believe have come to fruition over time. So the energy money, our local government supporting us by 1.5%, those have come to fruition. So we have included those. But one thing that Luke, Ken, and I talked about were that we don't believe it'll get any worse than this. So as we move forward, this is the starting point, and we hope to see that $13,251,000 decrease as we get new information from the state. So we don't see this getting any worse than it is. This is just a starting point, and there's so many unanswered questions about what about the base student allocation? What about the energy? Will there be any more multipliers placed in there for CTE? Will the intensive funding, although they put it on hold, will our district be held harmless from that change? So that's why we went to 90%. We don't believe they would go any lower than 10, but until they give us, and we'll find that out, we may find that out February, and that would immediately change $2.6 million back in the budget. What we have today is our best projection, because that's what a budget is, about what's going to happen next year. And so, as Mr. Forrest said, this isn't the time to point out things that we wouldn't have and things like that. This is just to know, keep our eyes wide open as we move forward about what it costs to educate kids in our valley and what we want for our kids in the valley.
I think I might add to that that one of the messages that I would think we would want to go to the legislature with is when you have a funding formula that's very good, Alaska's formula is a good formula, and Alaska provides a lot of support to districts. However, there's a wide gap between the local share that we receive and the local share that Anchorage receives. If we were receiving the same percentage of local share that Anchorage received in this, under the rules of the state formula, you would see this in almost this entire deficit evaporate. It would be gone. So, as Dr. Paramo has said, of the Big Five, we are receiving the least amount per pupil of the Big Five.
Mr. Larson?
On your projection assumption on page 6, you said beginning unassigned fund balance is completely utilized. How much is that? How much is in the fund balance that it will be completely utilized? And I assume to bring this down to 13.5, right?
Right. It's $1,699,886.
So the deficit would be almost $15 million if we didn't utilize that. And that's the only fund balance we have.
That's correct. And I would like to point out, not to belabor a point, but if we had been allowed to maintain an adequate fund balance, as recommended by the Government Finance Officers Association, you wouldn't see this deficit impacting this district or the kids in this district as you're seeing it now. We would be able to smooth this effect over a number of years. But because of, and I will be honest for the radio listening audience, this is a Ken Forrest editorial comment, an archaic, outdated, absolutely unacceptable policy that steals the fund balance from this school district and gives it to the borough. That would be the end of the editorial comment. We do not have an adequate fund balance to run a $240 million operation. If we had that fund balance, this would not look this bad.
Because that's what Anchorage did on their fund balance, too. They were dampering it down by utilizing their fund balance. Of course, they get 100% of their fund balance, too.
That's right.
And fund balance, if you had 100% of your fund balance, you would be able to stock away for the rainy day, which it's raining, and we don't have a stock, right?
That's correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Forrest, if somebody in the listening audience or somebody in the audience wanted to look at these numbers in this presentation, where would they go to find that?
If they go to the district webpage, it's already been posted. They go to the bottom of the district webpage. There's a little icon that says financial information. They click on that. They look for the 2013-14 budget. And this document has already been posted. It's available immediately.
Thank you.
One last question. The big amount of increase in salary and benefits, is that due to contractual stuff like step increases every year, as well as education increases, and the benefit increases is because we had zero last year, that you're assuming that the health care package is going to jump up there to at least 8%, a considerable amount?
Right. We had a 3.63% increase in benefits with a zero cost for our health benefits. So we've assumed a 6% increase in health benefits for next year. And that's what causes the benefit increase to be 9%+. And we have assumed, as you've indicated, that status quo would maintain and we would be required at a minimum to pay steps and columns.
And this counts nothing to do with any negotiated COLA or anything else?
It does not include a negotiated COLA.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Through the president, I also do have a bond project update. The information is posted, again, on the district website, and the board did receive the information yesterday in picture format. Actually, we're not going to do that safety update. It's just the board. If the board had any questions about our particular site, we're welcome. We won't spend the time speaking to each entire. We have over 50 projects going on. And so if there was a particular question that Mr. Fulp or Mr. Bechtel can answer for you, we would be happy to do so. They will come up to the podium. I know that the board wanted to keep this in the forefront so that our community can continue to see that the bond that they passed last October is coming to fruition. And so this bond project update being on the agenda is strictly to keep the Matsuboro School District accountable to its constituents. And so they're here just to answer questions if you have any in particular.
Mr. Larson.
Thank you. The 2012 school bond projection schedule that was presented to us last Monday at our borough school board meeting, is that online anywhere? Can I refer it to anybody, or is it going to be on our school site line?
I have not put it online. Have you?
This update?
Right.
Yeah, we'll make sure it's on on the website. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you requested it at the last meeting, and we gave it out Monday.
Could you just kind of go over a little bit what was presented and what's on this piece of paper?
Sure. There's $216 million of school bonds from the 2012 bond, and it's broken down into 101 projects, into 21 project agreements, and we grouped them by work type and basically, the design and construction take place between 2013 and 16. And as I said, a lot of them are combined together to be more efficient with the work. Tonight, you'll hear presentations for two of the 35% designs, the day school and the pathway. And very confident that those will go well and be approved. We have outstanding AE firms working on those, and outstanding project managers working on those as well. So it's 101 projects out of the $260 million bond, but you eat an elephant one bite at a time, so that's how we'll do it. Madam President, do you have any questions? Or
does anyone else from the board have any questions?
I do know that on the positive side, you'll be heating fewer portables. How's that for the budget there?
All right. Thank you. Okay, that brings us to consent agenda.
I'd like to make a motion. We move the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
The consent agenda has been moved and seconded. Does anyone have any objections? I'm sorry, I need to read off the consent agenda. Consent agenda includes the minutes of November 7th, item B, 13038, permission to accept and expend a grant from Kinnick Tribal Council. Item C, 13039, permission to apply for a workforce investment grant. Item D, 13041, permission to accept and expend a grant from Alaska Family Services or with Alaska Family Services. Item E, 13047, recommendation for certified new hires. Does anyone have any objection? Then it passes. That moves us on to action items.
I would like to move 13-032, second reading of Board Policy 6146-2, Other Credit Options.
I'll second that.
The item has been moved and seconded. Does anyone have any, I'm sorry, is there any public comment? Do we need to have a report?
Madam President, we are prepared and willing to answer questions if needed.
Does anyone on the board have any questions on this?
No question, but a comment. The listening audience might not know what we're talking about, so is it all right if I read the comments?
Yes, that would be fine.
Okay. The revisions for this board policy reflect efforts to increase parent choice, simplify the process, and have supporting documentation files at school sites and in permanent files. And that's for the credit that students can seek.
Does anyone have any objections? All right, that passes. Item B.
I'd like to move item B, the charter school revenue adjustment, 13-036.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. It is charter school revenue adjustment, and do we have any public comment on this particular item? All right, can we have a report from administration?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. The charter school revenue adjustment is a standard practice, similar to Mr. Forrest referencing our intensive pupil count. Once the numbers in the district are audited by the state, revenue is adjusted. Our charter schools are paid per pupil, and so their enrollments have been certified. And at this point in time, we move from what was they budgeted to actual student enrollment. Some schools will receive more revenue due to having more students. Some schools will receive less. This is perfunctory and something we do every year.
All right. Is there any discussion on this item from the board? All right. Does anybody have any objection to this adjustment? All right. It looks like this one passes also. We move to item C.
I'll move item C, 13-037, legislative priorities.
Second.
Do we have any public comment on item C, legislative priorities for the 2013-2014 school year? I know we have an administrative report and an updated agenda.
Thank you, Madam President. These legislative priorities that are before you are a culmination of discussions as well as items that have come up at your Alaska Association of School Boards. Of course, they connect to all the reports that we've previously made, and some of the legislative priorities that MATSU has and that we would ask the board to decide and on tonight, of course, is in the area of educational funding. The base student allocation, as well as increase in correspondent student funding, is something we seek. Additionally, the $1.5 million in transportation, we would like that item either fixed or receive a straight legislative grant to make that happen. In that case, of course, that $13 million deficit would then be reduced by that $1.5 million. Additionally, we'd like one of the legislative priorities that we ask the board consider is to make school districts fiscally independent and accountable to the state. That would allow us to do just that, is to keep that fund balance in the district to be used year after year for students in the district. Additionally, if the BSA in the multi-year funding, if the state chooses to do a pay-as-you-go scenario each year, the district is put into a bind, if you will, in having contracts and budgeting for the next year. And the items under the pay-as-you-go would assist the district in placing teachers in classrooms for which they're accredited, would also allow us to predict the funds that we might have the next year based off of the prior year's count. And it would basically just free up the ability to create a budget and bring that to fruition. One of the major things is that our contracts with our teachers are due in March, and our state doesn't let us know the revenue until April, and so that causes a problem. The exciting things that we'd like to talk about are those added value items under capital requests, and our delegation was very generous to our schools last year in providing for charter school building funds, local library funds, school funds for books, computers, but they also supported five items district-wide, and on this list, those five items are attached, and we just finished up a meeting on the MATSU Day School, so I've added a priority, and I will list those, Madam President, if you would desire. Okay. Number one is to continue the Alaska Middle College, and those funds would be used over a two-year period. It is true that after that time, the number of students in the program would pay for the program. The Air Force ROTC is a request to continue that for two more years. Good news in this is that 1 year after opening, the Air Force JROTC at Wasilla High School has had to turn children away. The rules, I guess, and regulations for that program is that the two soldiers are only, or airmen rather, are only allowed to have 140 students. We've not only requested to keep the program going, we've requested another sponsorship of military personnel so that we may grow that program. However, since this was published, we have had an audit done of our program by the federal government, and they are highly impressed, and it was the recommendation of the colonel, I'm not sure if he was even higher than that, a general. He came out and said that he would recommend that Wasilla High's program be funded fully by the federal government, as he had a program in a different state he's recommending that Wasilla High receive that funding. And so although it's on this list, we also are always looking for other funding sources for our programs. So that is really high regards to Wasilla High, the colonel, Magnin, who's there, as well as the first shirt. Three is the preschool program. MATSU received a grant. The state of Alaska had a $2 million grant. We received $500,000 of that grant. 25% of the entire state's grant went right here to our preschools. We would like to support and grow that program, and it would include preschools for students who cannot have the opportunity to go to private preschools, as well as work with parents as teachers. In addition, we would have an outreach program to all private preschools and broaden that. Currently, our staff provides materials for free and training for private preschools in the reading program so that the students come ready to learn and prepared. And so this isn't really, this is the benefit of the child. We are not trying to take over preschool, but we want to be sure that whether they go to private preschool, homeschool preschool, or a local school preschool, that the children are receiving a high level of rigor, if you will, and fun in their learning. STEM Initiative would continue to fund our STEM programs. STEM is a delightful program, rigorous. It brings, we had a presenter here from UAA, specifically, all these STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, careers all really do involve math. And he let our students know that, told all our sixth through eighth graders, and I hope this doesn't offend anyone, he said, stay up on your math, because math means money. So our kids left, math means money, leaving, knowing to do well in math so that they can move on. So this adds value to our kids in our programs. Finally, the cyber centers. As you know, across the nation, learning is being blended. We've never taken away a teacher, yet we've added the electronic component. This would continue funding so that our cyber centers can reach out even more, offer more classes. We have our local school district teachers choosing to teach these classes. We teach currently students from, we have a cohort. I see some Houston High School students in the audience. We have a cohort of eight students at Houston High School receiving calculus class this year for the first time in a long time through a teacher at their school, as well as the cyber center being able to be highly qualified. And, as we are 25,000 square miles in the Mat-Su, we would like to broaden this program so that our teachers who are not highly qualified in a particular area but have the skills and knowledge to teach it can use this certified program to be able to offer students credit. And finally, the last item that was placed on the list overall that we would ask our legislators for legislative grants would be the co-location of educational and mental health services at Mat-Su Day School. Later in the agenda, you will see that the 35% building plans for Mat-Su Day School, one of our newest schools passed in the school bond last year, is ready to be constructed or moving towards that. Though we have worked with the Juvenile Justice Director, Lucy Hope, and her team has worked with Juvenile Justice, the Office of Student Office of Child Services, and some other not only Mat-Su but State of Alaska agencies to partner. The students at Mat-Su Day School, we do try to work cooperatively with the local service providers. Many of these students are in the Bring the Kids Home program, so they do receive counseling and other services. We would like to have a partnership and be able to provide offices right there in the school to build the capacity of Mat-Su Borough School District to really be the best service model in the state for both education and health services that are directed by the state through the health mental health services. And so that would be an addition of $391,000, not very much, that we could at this point in time at the 35% level add into the building to add value and partner with those agencies. These are just for your consideration. There isn't a priority on any one over another. But as you know, numbers 1 through 5 were granted in 2012. And I thank our legislative delegation. Tomorrow, I will speak with them, with our board president, Ms. Powser, to let them know the return on their investment. When we receive legislative money, we make sure we take care of business and get the job done. And tomorrow, you will see the successes and the work that is done in those five areas that I believe will lead our delegation to pay for those added value things that they can have in their homeschool district.
Member Lacey.
Through Madam Chairman, I don't know if this is the right time to bring this up, but can we see if we can ask the legislature tomorrow if they can change the law to allow commercial vehicle inspectors to inspect buses when there's no children on them? Is that possible tomorrow?
I don't know if that would be the right form, but we'll check up on that and let you know. Are there any other questions? Any comments, any discussion on this? For the audience, we have had an outline of the legislative priorities for the last week or so. So this isn't the first time we are seeing these. We did have many of the capital requests last year, and our legislators did fund that. So with that, Member Wilton.
Thank you. I just want to say that I believe the work that the AASB has done to provide us as a forum to talk about the BSA, to talk about the transportation issues, is good, to get their feedback and to have their support. And I appreciate that our board sent so many of us this time to to the conference so that we could be up on these issues. And I just wanted to thank the administration for really putting it together, too. I know that we all were a part of this, but it makes a big difference that we get support from others outside of our district as well. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments from the school board? Okay. Do we have any objection of passing this as our legislative? All right. Is there any objection to passing this as our legislative priorities to be presented tomorrow? All right. No objection. It passes. Member Larson is requesting a 5-minute break. I'm calling the meeting back to order. We are down to item D, Matsu Day School 35% design.
Madam President, I'd like to move item number 13042.
Do I have that number?
All right. It looks like we have Lucy Hope here in front of us to do a presentation.
Is that on? Okay, thank you. Tonight we are excited to present to you the Matsu Day School 35% design. A core committee of district staff, along with Borough Project Manager Jeff Walden, has been meeting regularly with Wolf Architecture and NAC Architecture Firm since August. We've been also meeting with members of the community behavioral health community and mental health agencies in the Valley, and are speaking with the Department of Juvenile Justice about co-location of services in the facility. Our district staff who've been on the core team are LeBron McPhail, Dave Anderton, Don Carney, Wolfgang Winter, Dennis Boyer, and myself. And we've also had involvement from many other staff members, our IT department, nutrition services, and most of the staff at the day school. And with that, I just would like to say the process has been very thoughtful, and we're confident that the design meets our district's educational needs. I would like to introduce Gary Wolf from Wolf Architecture and Kevin Flanagan from NAC Architecture. Thanks.
Good evening. I'm Gary Wolf, and I'm pleased to be here to present our work on the Matsu Day School thus far. And I've with me today Kevin Flanagan. He's our collaborator on the project. We're very excited to have the opportunity to work in our community on a school, and we want the best school for the Matsu, as do you, and so we have collaborated with one of the nation's leading architecture education firms, and that's NAC Architecture in Seattle. And Kevin's been up here about 4 times, and we've worked with our building committee and about rung them out, and we feel like they're co-designers on the facility, and we've had a lot of input from them, and we've worked very hard to incorporate all of that design into the school. It's a very challenging school with a very interesting population, and we've had a lot of fun trying to kind of integrate the needs and desires of the building committee. And the roles between NAC and Wolf Architecture is NAC is the design architect. They've done several schools like this down in the States and have a great deal of knowledge of educational facilities. We're the local technical architect, and we're making sure that all of the building details and materials and building systems meet our local conditions, and we'll be on site daily doing construction administration during construction. So with that, I'll let Kevin kind of go over the design of the facility, and we'll take questions at the end of this. Thanks.
Hello, and glad to be here, and thanks for having us. We've talked a fair bit with the core committee about things that are important to them, and to describe some attributes to serve the school. And things that they described are that the school should have a sense of hope, that it should be safe, and have a non-institutional feel to it, among some of the other attributes they described. This is a special mission school that will serve K through 12 students, and so there's quite a range of needs that are being addressed in here. Let's see, where are we? There we go. Okay, now we've moved back forward. The site is off of Bogart and Tate, just behind the maintenance facility that's there. And it's a partially wooded site. And with the design of the new school, what we were looking to do is to preserve the trees along the perimeter as well as the trees to the north. So this provides a nice wind block as well as provides some screening for the school off of the busy roads and helps preserve sort of the natural setting that's there. The layout of the school is such that the administration is really front and center. That's the yellow portion in the middle of the plans. And so this allows as far as for good support of the administration to the students as well as good management and control of the school, and helps provide that sense of safety and control within the school. The middle school and high school portion is the part in the plan in dark blue. And so that's in one wing that is fairly self-contained as far as the various supporting the programs needed for the students of that level. And then on the opposite side of the school, and I guess the turquoise color, is the elementary school wing. And so the school overall is very compact, but provides some nice definition of the spaces within it. And then in the, I guess, the central portion with the red and the green is the multipurpose area and the media room. And so these are spaces that can will likely be used after hours by community, with the academic wings being closed off to open up the school for after-hours use. I'll also note as far as that I noticed that there's some curves in the school, and that's part as far as when working with the committee, as far as they kind of responded well to the idea that kind of softening some of the edges, and especially in some focal point areas that reinforce sort of that non-institutional feel within the school. That's otherwise, it's very compact, as I said, very efficient, so that helps support the building being energy efficient, as well as facilitates management of the school throughout. The overall, as far as the building, I want to say that we're just going through right now the selections of colors and materials, and so what's represented in these diagrams is being refined with the committee's input. One of the other things we focused a lot on is bringing natural light into the school. We know that natural light helps support a positive atmosphere in the school. It's been shown to be supportive for educational improvement. And it is also supportive, especially for students of at-risk populations. So trying to bring in something as far as that helps the natural light, helps the atmosphere of the school, as well as, again, giving that sense of hope that was described by the core committee. This is a view of the school in the approach off of Tate. As the front portion there is the achievement classroom, has a curve to it that guides us around to the front of the school, where the front of the school is facing south, so again, able to bring in a lot of the nice south light coming into the school. And then again, we're drawn into the front entry along a curving wall there at the admin that pulls us into the entry and into the school. So that's what we have, what I've got to show for you, and otherwise we welcome your questions.
Member Lacey.
Yes, is this the final plan, and is this what's going to be built?
This is the 35% plan, so there will be refinement. So I'll say what will be finally built plan-wise, is going to be very much like this, but there are refinements going on as we've been meeting with staff and representatives at the school, such that to make sure as far as that basically every nut and bolt is going to be working well for the school functioning. So there are refinements still to come.
Okay, I have a bit of a bother here, the fact that we're going to build another school with a flat roof. This is not good. Last year it rained so much that we could have had an arc out here. And we still have schools, buildings that don't have roofs on them already. Why can't it have a flat roof? A pitched roof, excuse me.
We have done a lot of flat roofs in the district, and one of the things that flat roofs allow us to do, it allows us to contain the water in the wintertime and in the summertime, drain it internally within the building and out. The flat roofs have a very good track record. They're have 40-year warranties, and overall, pitched roofs actually perform better. And one of the reasons is that when you have a pitched roof, you end up building large volumes of empty space that has to be cool in order so you don't have icing on the roof. And so it allows the school to minimize liability from having to direct snow off of these roofs, and minimizes the amount of construction for the volume of the facilities.
There again, it rains a lot. We have schools right now that have flat roofs that last summer we had them worked on. They're not done yet. They're still leaking. The taxpayers do not like bonding for roofs.
It's true, and we are using a high quality roof. There's problems with sloped roofs as well. And Glacier View, in Trapper Creek, for instance, they have a sloped metal roof on that, and we were up there. And with ice accumulation on that roof, the entire roof needs to be replaced, and it has all of the fasteners on that roof have elongated about a half inch from the contraction and expansion on those roofs. And so, you know, roofs are an issue, and I won't disagree with you. It seems the track record on flat roofs is better than the track record on sloping roofs. And so that is one of the reasons why we've gone with a flat roof on this.
I would just like to go for the record to say this needs a pitched roof because the taxpayers do not like paying for roofs. Thank you.
Member Larson.
Yeah, I won't talk about roofs, but in my past life, I helped design a couple buildings for the prison system, and we had a consultant firm come up and we built it, and forgot to consider the Matanuska wind and snow. And I just want to throw out that I see that the maintenance access is north and east. And did you take in consideration the possible tremendous amount of drifting? I know you're up here the first time, or you've been up here four times, but you haven't. Last year, if you were up here and the winds were blowing like they are, we had 3 or 4 foot of snow on the ground. And there's a tremendous amount of problem with doors drifting shut or maintenance areas. Have you considered, I'm just throwing that out, whereas you have a classroom that sticks out on the east side and you have maintenance doors on the north side, have you considered that issue that may cause some problems? I do like the south-facing school, by the way. I think that's tremendous. But have you taken into the climatization issues that we have?
Yes, we have, and I was born and raised here, and in Palmer, and so very familiar with the wind. And so Kevin and I and his firm and our firms have had long talks about the wind, and oddly enough, every time Kevin comes up here, it quits blowing and it's clear.
It's been gorgeous every time.
Every single time. And so I keep telling him that the notes on the doors that say, you know, keep the doors closed aren't just for him. But anyway, we oriented the building to the south for the main entry to protect it from the wind. And we're trying to separate out the service entrances from the public entrances. And so the site is protected by a buffer of trees, and so it's not out in the open, and we are very sensitive about those drifts. And so we've worked with Don Carney on the site layout, and it's a sloping site, so it's a fairly difficult site. It loses 20 feet from one side of the site to the other, and so there's a lot of grade to deal with, but we have been trying as hard as we can to keep those doors protected, and just given the direction of the wind and the sort of the slope and the grading of the site, it was hard to make every door as perfect away from the wind. But we have talked about that long and hard and how to minimize the effects of the climate on the building, because we know it's considerable.
Yeah, I know that's a very difficult thing, you being born and raised up here, us having to suffer. And why don't you just stay up here, by the way, and the wind will quit blowing forever. I just brought that up because we had a consulting firm at one time came up and designed a prison building, never took that into consideration, and we ended up tacking 2x4 walls up to block the wind and snow, and it didn't look good on the they didn't appreciate that, but it got to the point where the wind blew so hard that it would actually seal the door shut. And I was just looking at these north side doors. I realized there's a, you can't think of everything, but you can sure try. And
right.
I'm glad
to
see that you've taken that in consideration, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thank you.
Member Rutherford?
Yes, along those same lines, I may have missed it when Lucy mentioned everyone who was in, who you brought in. I heard nutrition services. I just want to confirm that you also had the people who fix things inside our school came and talked about the room they need when they have to come in and fix electrical, mechanical, and the space that they need for those rooms.
Yes, all of our meetings have been in the conference room of the maintenance building over there. And so they've been in all of our meetings, and you know, we'd like them to come and talk to us, because if they're not happy, we're not happy. Yeah.
All right. I was wondering, for the 1% for art that we're required now in buildings, are we designing the art in the construction of the building, like we did with Sioux Valley, or are we adding the art later?
We are going to construct it as part of the building. It is out right now for RFP on the state website. The artists will be selected, and then we'll be able to work with them in terms of getting the structure installed for hanging the art, and then after the building's built or during while it's being built, it'll be integrated into the design. But they'll be selecting the artist sometime in December.
All right. Are there any other questions from the board? All right. If you gentlemen will go ahead and have a seat, we have time for public comment. So is there anyone in the public who would like to make comment on this design for Matsu Day School? All right, I don't see anyone from the public to make comment. Board, what do you think about our 35% design project approval? I believe it was moved and seconded.
Is this discussion time?
It is discussion time.
I like the 35%, but I know it's a little tough to do, but according to our our borough code that we have to approve the 35% and then come back at 95% approval. But I would like something in the middle. I mean, that's 60% difference. That's a long stretch, you know. 35 to 90 is a whole different ball game as far as I'm concerned. Is there a possibility that we can get some update, maybe from our staff, about close to 65%, what it's going to look like, any different than what this is now? Thank you.
Through the President, yes, I will work with our team here and the architectural firms and provide a written update in your reading file, and then those folks from our district who have worked closely can be here to provide the feedback. And Mr. Wolf lives locally, so we can grab him as well.
So we can hold him accountable for everything, right? No, sorry.
Mr. Lacey.
Through Madam President, you know, we need schools, but we don't need flat roofs. I walked around on our roofs on July the 5th this year and looked at the roof. Colony High School supposedly had a 50-year roof when it was built, and when I was working there, it blew off. So we need pitched roofs. That's all I'm going to say anymore.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other comments from the board? Member Welton.
I, at one time, used to agree with Mr. Lacey. I do know something more about the engineering and the architecture and what happens up in the roofs if they're not built appropriately. And that was the problem with the old Soon Valley roof. And I do believe that there's some issues that, because I'm not an engineer, I can't explain it to you, Mr. Lacey. I don't know all of the ins and outs of it. I used to complain also, and I do understand that there are things that I can't foresee or understand about where the water goes or how we would take care of the snow and the snow loads. I've been around metal roofs where the snow all of a sudden decides to take off, and it's pretty darn dangerous. And then that means that those areas have to be, the property is not usable around those areas. And I do think that that might be something to take into consideration. Thank you.
One other comment, please.
Member Larson.
I do like the location of the boiler room, electric room, over with the kitchen and the delivery. It's concentrated over there. I guess the question would be to Lucy Hope. I'm not too up on day school national standards or state standards. And the question would be, is the space, the rooms, the storage, the life skill, all that, does that meet the standard? I'm sure it does, Alaska standards as well as national standards. Can you get up here and convince me of that? At least tell me. Thank you.
We've worked closely with Don Carney, who has a very good understanding of the state requirements for space. And the classrooms in this building are actually quite small because the classroom class size is quite small. We're looking at 8 to 10 students per classroom in a school like this. And, yes, I believe that all the features that you talked about, the needs would be met with this facility.
Okay, thank you.
All right, is there any other discussion of the board? All right, are we ready to take a vote on this? Member Larson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. This 35% design passes. Thank you. All right. The next agenda item, Valley Pathways, 35% design and educational specifications.
I'd like to move 13-043, Valley Pathways, 35% design, educational specifications.
And I'll second that.
All right, it's been moved and passed, and it looks like we have a report and the design. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce Mr. Mike Verbalo. And prior to him beginning, I do want the board to know that part of the process for this is that all those specifications did meet EED requirements. So they were, prior to being brought to this board, they did go through a query at the state level. So anything that we're held accountable for by the state and statute did pass. So prior to bringing it to you, we did receive those specifications, and I just want to reassure you that we won't be in any trouble with the state or anything like that. Mr. Verbalo.
Thank you. Good evening. Tonight we are excited to present to you the Valley Pathways design, the 35% design, to give you a mind's eye for what the facility will look like. To begin, there was a committee comprised of three Valley Pathway teachers, one student, Principal Jim Wanzer, LeBron McPhail from Instruction, as well as Don Carney, Dave Anderton, and John Phillips. They met approximately five times since last June, with an additional six times that a subcommittee met. In addition to this, the members met with stakeholders, including students, parents, community members, current and past principals of 7 through 12 schools, as well as our IT, special education, and food nutrition services. One of the nice additional aspects I would like to talk about is that the footprint from this school, or their blueprint, is modeled after Sioux Valley High School. And if you have not had an opportunity to go to Sioux Valley, it is a gorgeous school, and I would recommend you go there. In addition to that, it definitely meets the needs of our current 7 through 12 diverse population. Not only has the building been there for a little over, I think, two or three years, but we have seen great results from this. With that being said, I would like to introduce John Weir and Associates from McCool, Carson & Green Architectural Firm.
Okay, Madam President, school room members, Madam Superintendent, members of the public, I'd like to talk a little bit about Valley Pathway School. As you just heard, it is similar to Sioux Valley, the firm that we were actually the designers for that school as well. So I'll walk through this presentation and talk a little bit about how the process went and where the state of the design is today. So in terms of the project schedule, we have the school we've had school design review meetings, school board presentations tonight. DED submittal will be in the next couple of days. We're planning to present at the assembly presentation, which is a joint school board assembly meeting. We'll be moving into preparing our CD documents through February. Have some review meetings to validate any changes with the design committee and the borough and the school district, and provide drawings for bid in February. Planning to construct the building between May and July of 2014, with occupancy in 2014. The design process, as we've been hearing, we've used the Sioux Valley prototype and adapted that. We did five work sessions with school staff, MSB project management, school district administration, and maintenance. The school program is 7 through 12. We've got very individualized learning programs, which drives this sort of blended learning model between computer-driven and traditional instruction. There's no music or shop programs, no applied athletics, and limited extracurricular activities. Some of the building adaptations that we did for changing it from Sioux Valley to the Valley Pathway School. So we had informal performance areas. Library was modified into a learning lab. We didn't need the shop spaces like we had at Sioux Valley, so we augmented that into necessary classroom spaces. We've got the gym. We've got improved security and supervision based on some plan changes from Sioux Valley. The music room was deleted, replaced with a smaller platform stage, and we were able to reduce the footprint of the building to meet our project budget. Classrooms changed in size to accommodate the needs of Valley Pathway, and we had office flex spaces in between. We've got flexible learning labs in the middle. Lockers were not desired. And then we added an exercise room per our discussion with the building design committee. Some of the budget issues we have on the project, we've got a $17.5 million budget. It's about 43,000 square feet. We've got alternates built into the project so we can manage the costs as we move into bidding to provide some bid flexibility depending on the competition of the contractors. As part of your board packet, there was the supplemental education specification. This is an adaptation from the approved Sioux Valley ed spec, and we augmented it to meet the current needs identified by the Building Design Committee. In terms of the schematic site plan, we've got the building has southern exposure to mitigate the winds so that we have the main entry on the south side of the building. A lot of the classrooms have direct natural light. The site itself is at the existing Valley Pathway schools where the portables are at the top of the screen. South of that is there's a hill that we're sort of changing in order to make a pad for the new school, and we've got new water access, utility access being provided to the site. So we won't have well water, we'll have city water from Palmer. We've got a bus loop on the north side, a parking on the south side. Loading dock is on the west side. The plan, very similar to Sioux Valley, we've got on the right-hand side or left-hand side, right-hand side, depending on your orientation, we've got classroom blocks in green that wrap around the perimeter. They've got good access to natural light. In between the classrooms is a flex room. That flex room can act as a small office. It can act as a small breakout space. So the idea is that we have spaces, there's varied in many. Sorry about that. In the middle, we've got, in the middle center of the building is the commons, and in purple is a small performance area, gathering space. Then adjacent to that, to the right, is the media cafe, and then learning labs in the center. At the entry to the south is the main administration area, where we've got the principal's office, staff lounge, we've got the main reception and nurses area, and then adjacent to the loading dock is the boiler room and utility spaces, and then to the north is the gym in orange, and it's got locker rooms, small locker rooms, and it has some fitness space. Some of the daylight concepts we have for the building. The section in the center of the building is a little taller, and we create some areas where we can get some clearstory to drive light into the interior of the building. While we don't like to put classrooms in the center of buildings with no natural light, we try to augment that by borrowing light from clearstories as illustrated in this diagram. Some of the things that we're looking at doing is making some informal learning spaces, some hallway nook concepts where kids can learn more informally. This has occurred also at Sioux Valley, and it's been very successful. This is some renderings of the space on the interior. On the bottom, you're looking at the media cafe in the commons, and on the right-hand side, you can see there's natural light from the clerestories. And then the picture at the top is looking from the other direction towards the entry at the media cafe. This is the main commons. You can see we've got natural light and sort of focus area for people to gather, to eat lunch, and to do informal learning. And then the media cafe is on the right-hand side. This is an example of the exterior. One of the exercises that we do when we're working with the design committee is we try to develop what's called a learning signature. Just like your signature when you sign a check or some letter, it has its own special quality. And we worked with Valley Pathway to identify what their learning signature is, what their identity is. And as you saw in your packet, they landed on choose, commit, achieve. Their next steps is to have the DED submittal. We'll be working with that, the project manager and Don Carney. Assembly presentation next week, work through design refinements, and then prepare bid docs. The state of the drawings is more like, since we've used this as a prototype, it's more like a 50% design as opposed to a 35% design. We still have refinements to go through, but the design committee and the principal are very excited from going from portables to this building, and want to thank you for your time, and I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Member Lacey.
Yes, first off, just want to point out another flat roof, nice. But my second question is, up at Houston High School, they have siding on this building, and it's some sort of weird plastic stuff. And what happens is somebody will go up there and kick it, mm-hmm. and it falls out. Mm-hmm. And the maintenance department tells me it costs a fortune and they can't find it. What's our school's going to have on it for siding?
So on this...
Armor? I don't know.
No, what we're planning to do is provide ceramic tile and then metal siding up high. So we've got a good durable surface that lasts a long time in the abuse zones, and it has a very long life expectancy.
I'm just concerned that down the road, and this factors into our budget, which we now have a structured deficit, that we have things that last a long, long, long time.
So I can talk a little bit about that. We work on designing 50-year buildings, and I often get asked by clients, you know, is our building going to be energy efficient? Is it going to be sort of a green building? Is it going to be good for people to and students to learn in? And I tell them that, you know, if you want a green building, you're going to get one. And if you don't want one, you're going to get one anyway. Because professionally, I'm obligated to provide a high-efficiency building that saves operating costs and is a good learning environment for students. And that's my goal, and that's the goal that we're working with Valley Pathways to achieve.
Member Larson.
A couple questions. You said you had a $17+ million budget, and I guess this is for both schools. Does that budget include furnishings? Because we've run into that issue where we built buildings and forgot to furnish them.
So I can answer that question. The way DED structures their the project costs and the construction cost is the $17.5 million covers construction costs, and the project manager has a portion of a percentage built on top of that for project costs that covers the furniture, fixtures, and equipment. So there is money in the project for that specifically.
Okay. Listening to your team, we have never had a true alternative school. We've got Virchow, which is an old car dealership, American Charter, which is in a mall, and Valley Pathway, which is nothing but a bunch of portables.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken this design from Sioux Valley and converted it into a day school. Is there some formula? I'm not day school. I'm sorry. I'm thinking the other alternative school. The design within, is it workable, or is it something that just came together?
No, I can answer that question. The classrooms itself are very different than other traditional classrooms. So at Valley Pathway, they have a very need for lots of computer instruction in tandem with classroom instruction. So we've tailored those classrooms to be what I call light and quick. So nothing fixed. They have a lot of technology in them, so you can do perimeter computers. You can do classroom instruction in the center. All of the classrooms are neutral, meaning they're all virtually the same. They have the same technology. They have the same sort of layout capacity. So flexibility is built into the system, which they need for their immediate and long-term needs. So it's different than what you would find at Sioux Valley. So we work to tailor with the building design committee and their specific needs the design of each classroom, the way they're clustered together, the way they're grouped around the learning labs, and the way they connect with the commons. So we're pretty careful about sort of manicuring that design and making it specific for their needs.
And is that design functional compared to, say, other alternative schools that have been built in the States, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So MCG, we've done a lot of alternative schools, Polaris. We've done a Pacific High School in Sitka. We've done Chugach Optional. We've worked up in Fairbanks at Barnett and Ryan. They have alternative programs that they've done, and we've done a lot of that. And so this school, this particular application will work for this school, and I think it's in concert with other alternative schools that we've worked on.
Now, is this school design headed for and going to come in to budget? We're not going to get we forgot this, or, you know, we don't have enough money.
I have a preliminary cost estimate. Our base bid is under the budget that we have.
Well, once again, can we get an update on from 35 to 95 in between somehow?
Through the president, yes, and we will provide those in written form so that you can a lot of these questions can be answered by our staff. Don Carney is on the committee, and so really at any point in time, now that this has been presented, you can always call with questions, but we will have a set presentation before that time and at the time that our architects feel as though it's the next level. So not a problem at all.
Just one last comment. The reason I say that is we're going to approve the 35%, and I'd like the board to be an active member instead of just all of a sudden having 95% show. You know, it'd be nice to be updated and an active member of these schools, so when we get to 95, we know what's there, we know what's being built, and we know what it looks like. Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
I don't know if you can answer this question, but why don't these students need some individual space of their own to leave anything there? I noticed no lockers.
That was really the desire of the school. They just don't have a necessity for lockers. They use the classrooms in a robust manner, and so a lot of those areas were around the perimeter, as I was discussing, sort of is more of a home base, where they're doing their computer work, and then they're doing their instruction in the middle of the middle, and then going to other classrooms.
Are there closets or something? We wear a lot of winter gear. Well, teenagers don't, but
we're working to
accommodate.
I mean, I get gear. Yeah. Okay. And so we're working to accommodate that. And we've had some comments from the building design committee. You know, hey, we need more storage. Mm-hmm. So we're going through that sort of iterative process through design, and I think. We're listening, and we need to make some adjustments. So, that's a good comment.
Okay. All right. So, any discussion from the board? Oh, I am sorry. We need to do public comment. Is there anybody in the public who would like to make comment on this design and presentation? Okay, so board discussion. No, okay. So, Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes.
All right, that moves us down to item F. If I can have someone pull up item F, please.
Yes, I'd like to move 13-045, or 44, student expulsion case E, 13-001.
I'll second that.
All right, we don't have public comment or board comment on these, so we're going to go right to a vote. Member Larson?
Can you explain the vote, what yes and what no
I'm
means?
Sorry. A yes vote would mean that we agree with administration recommendation to expel this student.
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes.
I would like to move 13-045, student expulsion case E 13-002.
I'll second that.
All right. Again, this is a student expulsion case, so there is no discussion. A yes vote would uphold administration's recommendation for expulsion. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. That leads us to item H. Can I have someone bring this?
I'd like to move 13-046, Midnight Sun Charter School Calendar Amendment.
Second.
All right. Do we have any comment from the public? And can we have a report?
Yes, Madam President, Midnight Sun Charter School requested a change in their calendar, and it would influence so that they can attend an ASTE conference for staff development, and it's basically just moving an instructional day and a professional development day that aligns with the calendar dates. Please know that our board has approved our charter schools to have individual calendars that meet their needs to move their program forward. The principal teacher of the school, Ms. Jeannie Trozinski, is present if you have specific questions.
Does any member of the board have questions of Mrs. Trozinski? All right. Is there any? No. Okay. If nobody has any objection, we would move this forward. No objections? Thank you. That passes. That moves us down to non-action items. Actually, I'd like to take a 10-minute break. Can we break for 10 minutes? Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Madam President, I would like to move persons to be heard on non-agenda items to go right now because we have some members who need to leave and they wish to speak. Is there an objection?
I'll second that.
Is there an objection?
Is there any objection to that? All right, it looks like what we'll do is move persons to be heard on non-agenda items before non-action items. So if Ms. Welton will read it again, we have some new people here who didn't hear the rules for persons to be heard.
Public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. We have 1.5 hour left for that this evening. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per board policy 1312, individuals testify may not discuss complaints against any individual employees.
I also have cautioned folks not to use names because that might cause some problems. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any individual should be submitted in writing, given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. This is not a question-answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designate or take the issue under advisement. Okay. Please come up to the podium, please, if you wish to speak. Thank you.
My name is Hunter Smith, and I am the captain of the football team at Houston, and our coach is a safety officer. So according to one of your last board decisions, he is no longer able to coach. And I was wondering if there is a legality behind that or if that was a district thing that can be resolved.
Okay, Hunter, this isn't a question and answer period, so we really are not able to answer your questions. However, there is an answer to your question, and Dr. Dina Paramo will get a hold of you and explain the legalities or the rule that that prohibits your coach from coaching. Okay? All right. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it to us, and we do have an answer for you. She will get back with you.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Vervolo, here in the back. If we can direct you to Mr. Vervolo, he can answer your question right now. Okay.
I would like to say thank you for coming forward and all of you folks on a school night out here, and I appreciate that you did this.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else to be heard on non-agenda items? Please come forward and state your names. Okay, it looks like there's nobody else to speak on non-agenda items, so we will go ahead with our...
Can I point of order, please?
I'm sorry.
I know on our schedule it doesn't have it, but on the schedule that we got in the mail, it had on electronically. I didn't have this one. It has a course of Chinese. Is that not on our agenda?
It is on our agenda. It's on non-action items. It's coming up right now.
When'd you move it?
Okay, so we are on non-action items, so I don't believe these items need to be moved to be discussed. So we are on item A. Can we have a report from Dr. Paramo?
Yes, Madam President. And the person that I would call to give you some information just stepped out of the room, so I'm going to ask his assistant, Becky, could you please come forward and just, Becky runs our curriculum council, works with teachers who help design the curriculum, and she will, Ms. Becky Murphy, teacher in our school district, will answer questions and just provide a brief overview and then be here to answer your questions. On Mandarin Chinese.
We're bringing forward Mandarin 1, 2, 3, 4, and AP. It was brought by a teacher in our district who believes really strongly in world language. And in your packet, it may or may not have said, but one of the reasons that Mandarin's being brought forward is because it is the most widely spoken foreign language in the world. And so we wanted to make sure that we could get it on our program of study so it could be offered to our students. And in the
the future, with our APEX curriculum, which is online, we will have an opportunity to provide a Mandarin teacher.
Member Larson?
Now, the Mandarin teacher, is that similar to some of our other foreign language teachers that aren't certified but are able to come into the district and teach?
At this time, it's we're not sure how that would look because it's still in process, but the teacher who did bring forward these courses to the Curriculum Council was in contact with the Confucius Institute in Anchorage and has made some connections there to see if we could potentially get a Chinese teacher to teach it in our district if need be. And with APEX, it's looking like it would be next fall, but they would have a highly qualified Chinese teacher available.
Are there any other questions from the board?
Just one quick question. Is there some sort of a survey or a need assessment on this to show that there is that much interest from the students?
Actually, there is. We brought it forward and asked, and, you know, I guess the Curriculum Council voted on it because of the student input. That is one of the most requested languages now that we don't provide. And so the data in the nation is that the two highest requested are number one, Mandarin Chinese now, and then number two, Spanish. And so we have paid for, currently we pay for about 8 students who put forward just a desire to have it. We're kind of piecing it together through APEX and some other areas for a group of students to take Mandarin Chinese. And the success of it and what we've been reading and what this teacher brought forward with the research is that the world is looking at this as a business opportunity. It's really an industry. Commerce is in English and Mandarin Chinese, and so to offer our students an industry advantage, we are looking at seeing what we can do at minimal cost to our entire program in the district. This particular action, as Ms. Murphy said, is to specifically place it and approve it for our course of study, and then we work on how would this look in our district, can we afford a teacher, do we really have it, but the first is to adopt the curriculum and have it in our course of study so that it can be a choice for students.
All right, if we don't have any more questions from the school board. Thank you, Ms. Stuckey.
Madam President, I guess the original question is, I can provide those data in regard to student requests and teacher prospects for this class. If the board would like, I can put it in your newsletter.
All right, thank you. Our next item for discussion is a report from administration on industrial hygiene. So, Luke. I'm sorry, Mr. Fulp.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board. Just here to present a safety update on what we're doing currently. There's been some interest from the board as to what the administration is doing as far as industrial hygiene, looking at a district-wide kind of assessment of that and giving you an idea of where we're at with that and efforts we've made recently to look at this as a more globally as an organization. So the first thing is that what we have is developed basically a safety subcommittee. It's not identified as if you go to our website under the risk management department, you'll see plenty of documents that discuss safety and safety plans and what the safety committee should look like and what it should be comprised of and those sorts of things. The only downside of all of those reports is that they are outdated. They're from 2008 and that sort of thing. And so what we're trying to do is we're working hard to have more frequent meetings with a subcommittee and get all the documents up to updated and then roll out with maybe quarterly or even annual meetings, which is what the plan calls for currently. So at this point, the committee consists of employees from maintenance, custodial, food service, transportation, career, technical education, human resources, and business services. The committee's met four times this year, and I've outlined the dates there, October 17th, October 31st, November 14th, and then they had their last meeting today. Each of the areas that they covered during those meetings is outlined for your review. And before I get into some of the workers' comp information, because we do run a self-insured program for workers' comp, we do have access to all of the data. And, of course, when we want to present this data to the public in a public forum, we basically summarize it and present it in an aggregate way so no one can be identified and that sort of thing. But with regards to our safety program, we're looking at a lot of different options that we have available to us now that we didn't in the past. Some of that is, through technological advances, ways that we can administer mandatory trainings through bloodborne pathogens and any trainings for food certification and that sort of thing. But also we have within our MUNIS enterprise resource system with MUNIS, we have a module for tracking training on an ongoing basis for all of our employees. So that's another thing that we're going to look at, explore, and possibly do better at in the future. So record keeping is a huge part of any of the mandatory trainings that need to occur for our staff. And just for as far as the safety committee goes as well, we did send two of our employees who currently are on the safety committee to a training in Anchorage for their 30-hour OSHA cards. This was held September 17th through the 21st, and some of the objectives of this training were to gain a thorough understanding of how OSHA works, violations that can affect your company and industry, and OSHA's process for dealing with accidents, illnesses, and workers' complaints. Another objective was to use proactive safety audit tools to significantly reduce or possibly eliminate the number of accidents and injuries in your workplace, assess your organization's level of compliance and shore up areas of weakness, save your organization money and by slashing accident-associated costs, such as insurance premiums, workers' compensation, time off, and more. And then finally, alert your organization to proposed OSHA changes so that you can take them into account when planning for future growth. And as far as hazard communication goes, OSHA does have a new way that they're labeling chemicals, and that will be coming out next year, and so we're on top of that as well. But this is really important and critical to the success of our operations and what we're doing. For the past 5 years, we have partnered with an OSHA inspector to come into our schools. They've done that at least on an annual basis to review kind of what the condition of our facilities, do walkthroughs with us, let us know if anything is that needs to be brought to our attention. So with that, I do want to get into some of the claims information. On November 28th, Becky Wright, the CFO, myself, and Deb Rexford, our risk management analyst, went down to Anchorage and met with Northern Adjusters to review all of our claims for our workers' comp compensation plan. And with that, we've provided some aggregate information so that the board knows kind of where our exposures are, our current claims that are out there. Some claims are beyond what we would call they're very old claims, so they may be 10 years old. They just haven't been closed. But when you run a risk management self-insured program for workers' compensation, you're required to have something called an SIR, which is self-insured retention. It's basically a limit to how much you will pay. It's basic reinsurance for claims. Currently, our self-insured retention is $500,000. Any claim that goes above $500,000, our insurance that we buy kicks in and pays for the remainder of the claim. The other thing is with really old claims that are on our books still, after 10 years, they're no longer considered part of our experience as we go to renew for that type of reinsurance. So there's really no effect to us, no ongoing financial consideration that we need to take into account, but it is something that we still report on as far as being an open claim, and it is part of this information that I'll be showing you tonight. So the types of workers' comp claims that we have in total 34 claims. Again, some of those are over 10 years, but are ongoing. Don't cost the district anything at this point because they are covered by that self-insured retention that we talked about. But basically, this is the types of injuries that employees experience when they basically filed for workers' comp. And so you see, which is not unusual, the largest exposure is a fall or slip, slips, trips, and falls, commonly referred to. And then the second most is strain. So I just drilling down into some of this information, we were to get a little bit more information. So for falls, slips, detail, you can see that on ice or snow is the largest exposure, and for any Alaska business organization, that would be the largest exposure, and that's more or less something that we have to deal with being in this great state of ours that has so much snow and ice. But as far as strains detail goes, those are a little bit more difficult to classify. You can see that a lot of them are miscellaneous. When looking at those, it may be a teacher demonstrating a physical activity to their students, and it may be something that's just tough to classify as far as the strain goes. A lot of the back injuries that we reviewed, difficult to understand exactly how the back injury occurred, if it was a reoccurrence, if they had an injury beforehand and was just aggravated, that type of thing. So they fall into a miscellaneous category. Again, those are our two biggest exposures. And then when we look at this same data broken down by the type of occupation that the employee is in and look at those 34 claims, 44% of those claims are teachers, which is not surprising, being that that's our largest employee group. Then you also have broken out of that teacher category, we broke out SPED, or special education, which includes all the paraprofessionals and special education teachers in that area. You can see just this breakdown of different areas, and there's nothing that really stands out as far as one department or work occupation that is more risky than others. And again, when reviewing every single claim individual, there wasn't a pattern that I saw with regard to other than slips, trips, and falls. And then this is the final slide, is the cost of current claims by occupation. You can see, again, some of these costs are not costs that the district will be paying as they've exceeded the SIR limit, but they are claims that we still report as the claims are ongoing. As well as this also includes any claims that are being disputed or controverted. And there's a process for that with independent medical evaluations and second independent medical evaluations and so on and so forth. So this is the presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have as far as safety goes and our response and actions at this time.
Mr. Lacey.
Through Madam President. Yes, first off, has the committee started any hazard assessments on all of our employees yet? Under 29-CFR 1200 Appendix B, we have to do that on all of our employees. And I want you to answer this right away. And through all the people that are going to be on the committee, do we have a person that's going to compile all the hazard assessments and then make the judgments as to what trainings that we need to give our employees? And In the same breath, who on the committee is going to monitor our potential chromium hexavalent emissions in our seven welding shops? And my fourth thing is, if that employee on the corner of the chair over there asked for an OSHA 300 log tomorrow, could we give that employee the OSHA 300 log in the required 24-hour time frame? And who in the committee would investigate that we have permit-required confined spaces in this district? When you and I went out on the 5th of July, we walked into that coal bunker in Wasilla Middle School and also that one that was up at the water vault up in Houston High School, and that those spaces could be considered as a permit-required confined spaces, meaning that it is oxygen deficient. or have methane in it. And then, of course, I want to point out that this is really good. This is an excellent step. But in the last frame there, our office workers, we have a lot of liability there, and that tells me that maybe we're not having the proper ergonomics program that we probably need to implement. So that's all.
Mr. Lacey, that's quite a few questions, and I am I'm sure many of them are to make a point.
No,
I will please direct administration to go over those questions and to get back with you at a later date.
Madam President, may we have copies of the questions? I see that you wrote them down, and then that way we can write them.
Okay, Mr. Larson.
The slideshow that you showed us is 34 claims total over a 10-year period. I mean, or is it the 34 that are active over a 10-year period?
Yes, through the President, Member Larson. That these are just the current claims. They include any open claims at this point. And that extends through whatever date they were effectively incurred. But any closed claims are not counted into these numbers.
Just kind of curious how many, for instance, how many slips and falls, that kind of thing, claims are there on average on a year? And what does it cost? I mean, what's the normal settlement on something like that?
Well, through the President, I would assume that there's plenty of slips, trips, and falls throughout the year, and some are reported, some are not, and some we incur costs and some we don't at all. Okay. But that is information that we could provide to the school board by just looking at our historical data.
No, that's not necessary. I'm just kind of curious. Thank you.
I did have a question. I'm looking at this cost of current claims by occupation. I was wondering if you have any data that would say we're right with other big organizations like ourselves, if we have a higher amount of claims than other organizations. You know, where do we fall in that? Because just looking at this data, it tells me, oh, yeah, it seems like we've got a lot, but in comparison to other programs.
Yes, Madam President, that's an excellent question. Actually, a question I asked of Northern Adjusters myself. They were working on trying to benchmark some data for us as far as comparable organizations with around 2,000 employees and that sort of thing. And they didn't have any access to school districts, and they're just a kind of a different business model, I guess you would say, in terms of what they were looking at, you know, with all the different occupations that we have. So we couldn't, through them, we couldn't obtain any benchmark data, but we'll continue to look at national data and that sort of thing. I think that the frequency of claims may be something we can look at, but I think as far as the cost of claims, that all factors into the cost of providing medical services, and we all know that medical services are higher here in Alaska than the lower 48. So that would be something that we would have to look at as well, because whenever you do that, you want to kind of take that into account as well, the cost of them.
Okay. Okay. Did we cover, if you'll provide administration with your list, then we'll get to that list, Mr. Lacey.
And through the President, we appreciate Mr. Lacey's interest in this area. He actually provided the safety committee with an industrial hygiene report that he completed through his class, I believe through Matsu College, and it's a very good piece of review of industrial hygiene. Includes a lot of the OSHA standards and something that we took seriously when we were meeting. And so we appreciate the interest, and we will definitely get back to the school board with answers to those questions.
All right. Thank you. All right, that leaves us to our last non-action item. It is the discussion item on a board vacancy and how we want to go about advertising and filling that board vacancy. So the policy states that we will fill a board vacancy within 30 days of the vacancy occurring, that we will have public interviews, and really that's about the basis of what the board policy says. So I'm open to suggestions from the board how we want to go about advertising and filling this position. Member Welton.
In the past, we've advertised in the paper, and we can also advertise on our website since it's been quite successful. We in the past have used requested a cover letter explaining why a person wants to be on the board and a resume. That would be my thing, and then we would advertise that, and I think that the cover letter that says why they want to be on the board and any skills or things that they have that would be useful, of course, that would be in the resume, but they might want to highlight it in the cover letter. That's my suggestion.
Member Lacey?
Yes, I would like to echo what Member Walton said, but Catherine Ustry is real good at spreading the word of the gospel, and on top of that, since we're in radio land, I encourage everybody within the listening voice of me to put in an application.
All right, Member Larson.
My suggestion is to start this in January. I don't think that we need to burden staff and board members over the holiday time with this issue. The board member will be going out in the middle of January, I believe. And so I'd like to start the whole process up after January, after the week of January 1st, which I think the first falls on a Monday or a Tuesday. And so after that week, when all staff are back from vacation and all board members are on back from vacation, that we start that process up, which includes a means of advertisement, how long we want to advertise, which is what, and then have a schedule of events. In other words, advertise for X amount of days, review resumes X amount of days, and interview. You know, have a regular schedule laid out, but I'd like to see that regular schedule done after the holiday season. For one, I won't be around over the holiday season, and I know other board members may not be either. Thank you.
Do you have an objection to advertising now? It's public knowledge that the board vacancy is open. Do you have a problem with putting that information on the site and advertising now?
Yes, I do. I think what we should do is have a period of time, and I think that's what has happened before. Like you have a 15-day period of advertisement. We have a school board opening. I think the paper and everybody else is advertised, and people are waiting for it. But I don't want to start advertising now, say, 30 or 45 days prior to the interview process. I'd like that advertisement, official advertisement, butted up to when we're going to review and when we're going to actually interview and select. In other words, like a 30-day block. And not extend it 45 or 9 or 60 days. Have a regular schedule. I don't have a problem with, say it's going on the website, we're going to have a vacancy coming up in January. And here is the schedule. I guess similar to this right here, which is the permits for draw permits. I've known for 6 months when the time is, when I'm going to put that draw permit in, gives a specific deadline, and then they say, on this date we will make the draw. So instead of a vague thing, we say, on this specific date you can put your application in for this amount of time. It will be reviewed this amount of time, and this is when we're going to schedule interviews. I kind of want that kind of structure.
Member Lacey? I'm sorry, Ms. Rutherford.
Well, we already have somewhat of a timeline set out for us. We have a certain number of days that we have to fill the vacancy. So I see no reason why we can't set a deadline. Human nature is 90% of the applications are going to come in the last week anyway, but people are anxious for information, and they would like to see. If we already have an idea of what we want from them, I see no reason why we can't put it on the website that this is what we'll be asking, and we can just work backwards from our 30-day deadline. When will we have time to interview? When will, and set a deadline so people know. I don't think that staff will have much until that deadline.
Okay. Ms. Welton.
Well, the filing period to file is only 2 weeks, so I see no reason that it has to be longer than 2 weeks for a person who's filing to run for office. I think it's the same kind of thing. I have no objection to starting the first week of January and closing the end of the second week.
So you're saying that you see no problem with advertising first week in January, setting a deadline for applications somewhere in the middle of January, and then interviewing at a public meeting, of course, shortly after that. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Would we like to have it at a regularly scheduled meeting and interview people at a regularly scheduled meeting, or set a special meeting for that? Member Lacey?
Yes, we need to have a special meeting for that, but I don't see why we can't advertise now and say you need to have your application in by January so we can hit the road running. And we need to make sure that our board policy is in line with this whole thing, too.
All right, thank you. Member Larson.
Well, what happens, and I've been part of this. I put an application in. The minute I know that there's an application period, what I do is I would call central office staff, and I would come in and ask a lot of questions about the, well, you know, I would want this, and I would want the yearly calendar, and I'd look on the, now I'd look on the website, but I'd want to be able to talk to staff about policies and procedures and the direction. So I would be able to answer questions when I came up in front of the board. Once again, if we do that now, a lot of our staff time won't be available. People will be on vacation. I think we should just start it in January. Applications, advertisement for a week, applications due in this time, have it scheduled, and have a set date. That's my opinion. Everybody knows there's going to be an opening, so thank you.
Whether we need a special meeting, I believe that it would behoove us to have a special meeting. I believe we need an executive session to go over the rules for how to conduct ourselves and to verify. This could maybe happen at the 16th, little bit of a work session on choosing what questions to ask. Before we have a special meeting with that, I would like to as part of the process, have an executive session, meet with our human resources personnel to go over the questions that are appropriate and what's inappropriate, and also decide, you know, how many questions are we going to ask and how many applicants are we actually going to interview. If we get 15 or 20 applicants, I think there needs to be a process for choosing maybe 6 or 7. If we don't get very many applicants, then we won't have to go that way. But, you know, that's in the past, I've been through several of these, and one of them we had very many applicants, and we had to make some choices before because we couldn't interview them all.
Okay, so what if we open for applications January 1, accept applications through January 15th, and then at our meeting on the 15th, the 16th, go ahead and discuss how we're going to be maybe limiting, depending on how many applications we get, limiting the number of people we interview. There have been times where we've had just five or six and we interviewed them all. So we don't need to discuss that until we kind of find out how many. So when we have our meeting on the 16th, we can discuss how we're going to go forward from there. We can set our special meeting to interview the applicants. Does that sound okay with everybody? All right, Mr. Larson.
One quick thing. I'd like an executive session on the 16th to figure out what Member Welton was talking about, the how we're going to conduct the meeting. Are we going to do it, you know, round robin between us, and make sure that Human Resources and our attorney have the questions that we're going to ask to make sure they're appropriate. So when we sit down, we have a same kind of interview for every applicant.
And that's what we would plan on doing on the meeting on the 16th, if that's okay with everyone. All right. So I think we have a plan. That moves us on to future items for future business. December 6th is our meeting with the MATSU delegation. Oh, I am sorry. Did I? Okay. So December 6th is the meeting with our MATSU delegation, and at 8 o'clock we're having a work session on our board.
What time is that meeting?
The MATSU delegation is at 6:30 here tomorrow. December 11th we have our joint borough and board meeting here also at the six o'clock at the central office on the 11th. And then we do have ongoing MATSU Central School Policy Review. Is there anything else, future items, future business?
We can remove the policy review. It was done today.
Okay, wonderful. We're removing the policy review. We've already had our second persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Do you have a future business?
Is this where agenda items are, come
yes.
in? I don't know if this is an agenda item or if I would just like some information that could even come up on our weekly board connect. I went to the Wasilla swimming pool the other day for a birthday party, not for me, but it was very enjoyable, and I noticed that they had different designs up there to rebuild. And then on this newest monthly activities report we're getting now from the borough, it has a Palmer Wasilla pool assessment, and the fact that it goes on and talks about it getting old and that they've got user groups and consultant teams. These are attached to our schools, and we pay maintenance fees or at least electricity and heating. Are we part of this rebuild of the Matanuska pools? Do we have any input on it at all?
Through the president, I do see Mr. Don Carney, who is our chief person in the building, and he says yes, he does confer with the borough.
I would, since they are part of our school and we do use them and we do use our resources to help heat them, I'd like some sort of update on what's going on. And because the way I read this, they're looking for some sort of capital money that is not existent. There's a lot of questions I have. Wasilla Pool had four different designs on their board. How's that chose? There's absolutely nothing that. And are we going to be involved at all as a school district? Thank you.
Okay. Can we do an update in the Board Connect for that one, Mr. Larson?
Yes.
Okay. Any other items? Okay, so correspondence. Does anybody have correspondence to bring forward? Board committee reports. We did have a board meeting on policy.
So our policy meeting occurred today. We did review the policies that have been on our to-do list for the Mat-Su Central School, and we've made some recommendations to go back to the advisory council, and which is for Mat-Su Central School. That is the procedure for us at this time, and we will hear back from them. Also, our next group of policies that we are going to be looking at is the Article 1 policies, which have to do with community relations. And so the board, I asked the board to review those, look at them. We will have reports at our committee meeting, and our committee meeting is scheduled for the 23rd of January. And at 5 o'clock, and we expect to have that. I haven't verified it. We expect to have that one at Mat-Su Central School. It's not because we're doing anything for Mat-Su Central, but it's just that would be a central meeting place for us. And so that we'll be going over those policies at that time, and that gives members of the board and the administration a chance to look through, and then if there's any recommendations or anything, we can bring them forward in February.
Okay, there was another meeting with the Borough Assembly. Mr. Larson, can you report on that meeting, please?
Yeah, that was on Monday. And we talked about if I'm digging it up here. One big item was the tax for charter school, and I thought it was hammered out at that meeting, but I heard later it wasn't. And the idea is the fact that what was brought up at that meeting was the fact that of the $3 million that we got from the borough, 1.7 went to charter schools, and within our budget was approved by the borough and in the district, the tax money of $120,000, I believe, was not in the budget ever, and it was an assumption by everybody that it was money that was going to come extra. The big issue was which I appreciated, is the staff showed the borough assembly member and the borough mayor that we are meeting the needs of the charter school as far as financial. And at this time, if we have to, the $120,000 has to come out of our budget or the borough's budget, then we all have to scramble around and try to figure out where that money's going to come from. We have to readjust our budget, and everybody's on a tight budget, and it would be detrimental to do that. I thought it was settled that they may look at it, just put it off and look at it next year, but I guess it's not quite settled yet. Is that correct, Dr. Promo?
Through the president, yes, Member Larson. I did notice that the assembly placed that item on the agenda for the joint meeting on the 11th, but it was requested by the assembly, not our school board.
We also went over the school bonds and construction update, and we were able to get that five-year forecast, which was great, on projects. And they said that they're going to continue to update that. That way, when somebody asks you when a school is going to be built, you can just have that and say, looky here. And if you have any questions, talk to the borough. Don't talk to me, I guess. We also had a site selection committee update, and I'm not sure if anything really got resolved on that issue, but we did have an update. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Any other committee reports? Okay.
I just want to point out that I sit on the AAC for the Mattsu Central School, and we have had an influx of students from other charter or other homeschools and whatnot. I've always wanted to run those other places out of town, and it looks like we got a good beat on it now. Thank you.
Okay. Comments from the school board and administration. Dr. Primo, you want to do administration?
At this time, administration does not have any comments. Thank you.
All right. Member Larson.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentations today on the two schools. It made my vote very easy to see the professionalism and the hard work of all the committees that are working on that. And I do appreciate the work being done on that. I also appreciate the budget update and the budget forecast showing that the cliff that we're headed for that we're going to try to knock down somehow and continue to knock down so we don't fall off a cliff. It's nice to get that information prior to it actually happening. In the past, I've been on a board where they just show up one day and say, oh, by the way, at least we got time to plan and look at that, and I really appreciate it. And just want to appreciate the Board Connect and all the information. I know it's a lot of work for staff, but it makes the job easy to be able to approve things and push forward. I appreciate all the work by the staff. Thank you.
Member Welton.
Thank you. I was able to get out and visit some schools. I was up at Houston Middle and Houston High School last week and got to walk around and look at the artwork, which is always something I like to do, as well as listen to students and teachers and just be a part of things. I did have a lunch salad, and it was quite good. And I think that lunch people said it's too bad the students don't like the healthy food. they really are protesting that the healthy food is sitting out there for them to buy. So I also want to thank the members of the committee and administration for working today on the policies. And I also want to thank everyone for working so hard to make it easy to be a school board member. The Board Connect and messages and information about what's going on is so helpful. Also want to wish everyone who's not going to be here tomorrow or next week a happy holidays and be safe out there and don't slip on our ice if we ever get snow. Don't fall. Thank you.
Yes, two things. We're entering a cold and flu season, and I was just talking with a teacher about how difficult it is now, how much we fit into our curriculum. It's great, but it's so difficult when students miss even a day for them to catch. And, of course, it's always difficult on employers. And I would have brought this up if it hadn't just occurred to me today. But most places I've worked have brought in a nurse and given employees a flu shot. And I'm wondering if we couldn't work with the Mattsu Health Foundation or the public nurses or our own nurses to at least ensure all our employees have access to flu shots. As a child of a retired school nurse and a child of a cancer survivor with a compromised immune system, I'm a huge flu shot proponent. They work, and especially this year, they're good. So I just wanted to bring that up. I also wanted to say I'm looking forward to going to some of the school's holiday concerts. I'm trying to schedule a few in, and I want to publicly thank all those music teachers and PE teachers and custodians. I know that they all work together on those concerts in those schools.
Member Lacey.
Yes, first off, I'd like to publicly thank Mr. Falp over there for taking the bull by the horns and running with the safety program. For a person who now has a disability, thanks to the state of Alaska, This is a real important thing to me, and it's important to keep our employees safe. Second of all, Director DePriest and I went out and looked at some vocational classes last week, and we do some really neat things. And I don't think that we publicize those programs as much as we should. Thank you for doing a good job, sir. That's all I have to say.
All right. I do have an announcement, I guess. The Mat-Su School Board would like to recognize Terry Irwin. Tonight is Terry Irwin's last board meeting as an employee of the Mat-Su Borough School District, because she'll be retiring December 31st. Terry Irwin's long career as a school business official has led her to several school districts within the state of Alaska. The Yukon-Koyukuk School District from 89 to 97, and the North Slope Borough School District from 97 and 98, and most recently Mat-Su Borough School District. In addition to her dedication to K-12 public education, Terry also worked at the Isovik Okay, College in Barrow, Alaska for several years. Terry began working for the Mat-Su Borough School District in March of 2003 as the district's payroll supervisor. During her time at the district, she was tasked with more and more responsibilities in a decade in which the district experienced tremendous growth, increasing in size by 5,000 students. Almost 10 years after beginning with the Mat-Su, Ms. Irwin is the chief financial officer of the state's second largest school district. Ms. Irwin is well-respected among her peers. Terry served two terms as the director for the Alaska Association of School Business Officials, once in 94-95 and again in 2007. Ms. Irwin has presented to her peers on critical IRS issues such as accurately identifying the difference between independent contractors and employee-employer relationships. Additionally, under Terry's leadership, the Mat-Su Borough School District received the Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting for the first time in history. Tonight's award presentation, the district celebrated the receipt of this award for the third year in a row. We'll miss you, Terry. Congratulations on your distinguished career in school finance. All right, we're going to move on into executive session. Matters of the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal, counsel, or pending litigation. Today we're going to talk about negotiations and the superintendent evaluation. With the school board will be?
I so move.
Katie Gardner.
I'm sorry.
It would be Katie Gardner, Luke Fulp, Ken Forrest, and Dina Paroma.
Okay, so we need a second.
Second.
All right, so brought by Sarah and seconded by Mr. Larson. We're going to go into executive session.